Hello and welcome to episode 164 of Muse on Minis.
Musing and amusing.
This is Fat Asian and I play Protector to Menoth.
This is Josh and I play Pirates ER.
This is Colin and I play Signar.
This is Nigel and I play Signar.
John's already off his too.
This is Keith and I play Cricks and Stuff.
We're already off script.
This podcast has come off the rails in the first in the first 3 seconds.
Colin, who put you in charge?
We're off the map. News and announcements. Kingdom Con is coming up in April, the 24th through the 27th. It's apparently in California. Look into it.
Yep. Well, there goes a page of the script down. Boom.
That seems to about cover it.
Actually, I legitimately want to go to Kingdom Con, and I want to talk to about it for a second, because it sounds like a pretty legit con, and we need to expand our breadth.
We just drove to Rhode Island. I cannot drive to San Diego.
2 months later, we'll be in Seattle. No, it seems like this fits right.
I will hang myself from the roof of your van. I have no idea how I will do it, but I will hang myself from the roof of your van.
So you're incenting us? I mean, think about it. We will have driven this year to Rhode Island, Texas, San Diego. We just need to find a Canadian event.
Yes, we will have driven across the country at least twice, if not three times.
That sounds amazing.
I will draw and quarter myself.
All right. In all seriousness, was our trip to TempleCon not legit?
The trip to TempleCon was not legit.
Okay.
TempleCon was legit.
The trip home from TempleCon was also legit.
Beef house. I slept a lot, but yeah.
There's no beef house to look forward to going there and back to California.
Maybe we'll find a new beef house.
Like in Nevada.
Blasphemy.
There are gems. There are gems out in this country.
The Nevada beef house. That's a thing probably somewhere.
Yeah, well, in the wrong parts of Nevada, though, it might mean something different.
That's roast beef house.
Yeah, pork house.
We just detour through Arizona, then we don't have to worry about that stuff.
That's true. I feel like you'll be refused service, though.
Political jokes.
Dun, dun, dun. Anyway, the guys at Kingdom Con have put on... It's Ross and Kevin, I think, have been putting that on for a long time, and it's a really good event.
Colin, why didn't you put that information down?
Didn't have it.
You also did not make a note that Kingdom Con is an anagram for Condom Inc.
Oh my god. I will now drive to this convention.
Anyway, I'm strongly considering going. I may drive. I'm going to look to see how bad the drive would be, or I may fly. So it can't be that expensive to fly into San Diego.
Is it April? I think I can probably get a replacement train by April.
It's always that expensive to fly out of Des Moines.
We could drive to Minneapolis and drive, or drive to Kansas City and fly.
That's legit. We can look into it. We can at least look into it.
I want to get to some new events that we haven't been to.
Yeah.
That's all. And these guys are...
I mean, I'm not going to complain about going to San Diego, so...
And there is a War Machine Weekend qualifier. We need to take California's qualifier away from them.
It's cute that he said we.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to go there, and I'm going to win this con now.
I'm willing to take that wager.
Nigel, I need your dojo master.
Yeah, I'll be there. I'll back you up.
Yes!
I got it. There's no way I can lose.
Things of note at Kingdom Con Thursday will be there's Iron Arena all night. There's a Sum of All Tears tournament event, presumably a Theme Force event of some variety.
That's less sweet than Flanksgiving.
Indeed.
Do Flanksgiving next year.
It's 35 points. Friday, there is an Iron Gauntlet qualifier.
9 a.m. 8 a.m. registration.
Yep.
Deadly Duos team event.
Yeah, there's a team event that day as well. Looks like... What the devil is going on with these bullet points?
They kind of went all over the place. I was literally banging my head up against the wall because Microsoft Word does not want to cooperate.
Literally banging your head into the wall?
Literally. Okay. I have a bruise.
All right, good.
I believe
it. As long as there's bruise, then
looks like there's a Midnight Madness Mangled Metal at 12 a.m., then Saturday, There's a War Machine Weekend Invitational. Yep.
Saturday
qualifier.
Is the qualifier, as well as some.
Who's the boss?
It is. It's W H O S E, the boss.
That was literally copied and pasted from their website.
All right. Well, I don't blame you this time, Colin.
I'm trying to wrap my head around that grammatically, and it's not coming to me.
Yeah.
I'm out. Like, I'm just out. Like
there should be more to it. Like, who's the boss is this?
Yeah. Right.
Or
yeah. There should be a lot more to that.
Including an apostle. No.
I mean,
no, you don't need
no, 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 no.
Here's a legitimately interesting event. For all of you people that bought models that you have regret about, they have a Midnight Madness event on Saturday night, which is 25 points, two lists. Make the worst list you can and make your opponent play it. See who makes the best of the worst.
Make Durgan. Dude. Durgan theme force list.
This seems like a tournament I was born to play.
You're trying to make a list that is literally... It can't win. So this is a great time for the new Resnik with 150 racks.
Mm-hmm. So you know, might
actually be able to beat like a lot of these terrible lists. Like,
so what I don't understand is, can you just give away your caster? Like, I don't understand how that works.
No, you're not trying to win. You're supposed to win
with your opponent's terrible list.
Correct.
You trade terrible.
Oh,
lists.
You trade yes. lists. Yeah. Oh.
The only weird thing is having your opponent play with your models. Like, I will be the nightmare scenario for anybody in that tournament because they'll be like
100% correct.
No, there's always a possibility of a crump.
No, crump is worse. That's true.
Is he actually worse?
Yeah, you are.
I have never seen John play a game without breaking a model. I have never seen that happen.
Make your opponent play it. See who makes the best of the worst. So, like, I'm a little confused because technically you're just giving them your list, but you still have to, like, win?
You're trying to beat your own list with whatever dregs they give you.
Okay.
But yeah.
If you win all three games, your list had nothing to do with it.
Right.
Other than
how terrible it was.
Yeah, you were better at handicapping your opponent.
I see. Okay.
You're trying to hamstring your opponent as hard as you can.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm. I actually really want to play this now.
I just think it's super fun. It's an interesting thought exercise, if nothing else, just to think about lists. Like, you know, just off the top of my head.
I feel like a lot of people are going to make lists that have, like, a caster and a ton of solos, so I do think Nigel is, like, the man to play this tournament.
I also think, like, the Minneapolis meta would just be, like, annihilate this.
we all make terrible lists.
Like, I am 100% familiar with every one of these models on the table.
Yeah.
This, to me, actually does seem kind of like a pay-to-win format, because you can find the theme force that allows you to take infinite models that have no attacks and take
like the Resnik Rex.
Right, something along those lines. I would have to go through and look and see
Resnik
what is
will probably just spell
actually the worst army.
Spell assassinate
possible,
somebody.
But
yeah. I mean, I doubt there's not enough incentive to winning this to bring that out.
Right.
So I think this just ends up being like super fun.
No, it's just great for somebody that's just like, I'm finally going to get use out of some of these models.
Yeah.
It's only 25 points.
High shields, go! Do you make two lists or just one list?
Two lists.
Oh, my God. You have to make two terrible lists?
Yep.
That's so much work.
They're only 25 points.
Do you pick which list to give your opponent?
That would be kind of fun.
Maybe. Don't know.
So you both, like, you have to look and be like, it's like that list might be able to beat. It's like, this looks like this list here might be able to beat that one, so I can't give him that.
Yeah, I wonder how it works. Maybe you just give them your two-list pair, and then you do, like, a normal. Yeah.
I mean, that makes sense.
It'd be more fun to, like, actually just literally just stick them with it. Just like, no, you get this one. And then they're like, no, you get this list.
But, like, it's like divide and conquer in a weird way. So you can't, like, not hand out both of your lists throughout the tournament.
No idea. Sunday is a hardcore. Pre-registration is already open. A four-day pass is 50 dara. A single day is 20 dara. Saturday is 30. For more information on Kingdom Con, visit www.kingdom-con.com. I feel like I've said that before.
Yep.
Yep.
When the last time we talked about Kingdom Con and they didn't have their website finished yet.
Ah.
Yep.
Ah.
We need to have a talk about...
Oh, this is... It's ink-like tattooed. Like, not ink as
not
like incorporated.
Incorporated. And then there's a G floating.
Okay.
Yeah.
Eh.
I mean, Condom King sounds interesting.
I guess Condom King. Condom King.
Condom King. Yeah. Yeah.
God, Nigel, why?
Dum dum.
Dun, 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 dun. That's just a preview of what you can expect on the next season of using many special victims,
you
know?
You need the hard hitting exposés. All the events and goings on.
All right. We're going to go into a newer player segment that we haven't visited for a long while.
Yeah, for new players. Josh.
Yeah, Josh.
Josh has gotten his caster killed a lot lately.
Yeah, Josh.
It's really warmed my heart.
Yeah, Josh.
The most recent game, I saw someone else's caster fall over dead.
That didn't happen. I didn't see that at all.
Suck it, Kane.
I didn't see.
It doesn't really count though when it's Colin. So you know
what? What do you mean? Oh, when I get my caster killed, it doesn't count. But when Josh gets his caster killed,
that's like par.
Okay.
Our segment for today is how to keep a caster safe. So. The easiest way is out of all threat ranges, but that's also
not always
the
possible.
Least practical.
It's particularly hard with Killbox. It seems like, have you guys noticed this in 2014? Like, it feels like at tournaments, every other scenario is Killbox.
I think it is 50-50 now.
No, it's not quite. No. It's like just under 50%. I think there's like one more.
Like 5 out of 12 are Killbox
or
something?
Yeah, I think it's something like that.
Yeah.
I usually operate as though they all are. I just never play as though it's... there's not a kill box.
Oh, I usually operate as if there's never a kill box because I love to put my caster like in the back corner of the board. Mm-hmm. But I play Menoth, so that's kind of how we have to roll because our guys just fall over dead to sneezes. It's bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
And we can't take Cloud Dwarves. So, like Keith said, the number one way
shouldn't
to protect...
shouldn't be so racist.
I'm not racist.
I mean, you're not taking Cloud Dwarves.
All right.
Anyway, back to what I was saying. Like, reiterating Keith's point, the number one way to protect your caster is to be out of threat ranges. So the more threat ranges you keep them out of, the safer they're going to be. For example, if you know that a defender shoots 16 inches and it walks 5, is that right?
Correct.
If you can keep your caster 21 inches away,
it
never gets shot by a defender.
So if you're Harvey... easy. Anybody else? Eyeball that.
It's not hard. All right. Here's a pro tip. If you have like a 12 or a 14 inch control range, then you're only eyeballing 7 or 9 inches. That's not so bad.
That's for most of us, it's harder for you because that's like double your usual eyeball.
He's being generous today. I'll take it. It's a promotion.
So I think. The first part to, or the next step then, is to identify which threat ranges are important. Because obviously, if your caster is somebody that starts with 17 armor, the POW 10 shooting is not really a threat range you're worried about. So Gun Mage's threat, 20 inches. And that's a very hard threat range to stay out of a lot of the time. So if you're Kane or, what's her name, Assyria, you really have to care about that Gun Mage threat range. But if you're... Terminus, you don't, or Butcher, you don't care at all.
Yeah.
So maybe we should rephrase the question. Instead of saying, how do I keep my caster safe, it's more important to identify what are the threats to my caster.
What to keep your caster safe for.
Well, this is actually just like a really good skill to have in general, not with specifically your caster, but like every time that you're moving models that are of significant importance to the overall game plan, identifying, like, I do this because I'm playing two Colossalists lately. I do this in literally every game I play, which is identify the pieces in my opponent's army that can kill my Colossal and make sure they can't get to my Colossal before I can scalpel them out. Mm-hmm. So it's a similar principle to that with your Warcaster. It's just your Warcaster is the most important piece in the game, obviously.
Yep. I mean, so my thought process is I've been playing Xerxes a little bit lately, and my thought process with Xerxes is if I can kill whatever can kill my war beast before they can get to my warcaster, then I'm probably pretty safe. So like if I know that there is a galleon on the other side and I have a Tiberian, if I can deliver my Tiberian to that galleon, my defender's warded caster probably pretty safe. That galleon's probably out of the way. So basically, my goal is to remove heavies and kind of like leave Nyss Hunters alone type stuff. And
right. So you're offensively keeping your caster safe by identifying the threats to your caster and removing them before committing your caster, which is a pretty standard way to play, but something probably that we don't talk about a lot.
It depends. There, because you can be playing, like, as somebody who plays squishier casters a lot of the time, there's sometimes where it's just like, well, anything over there could kill my caster. So you just have to play a little differently. And I think there's a lot of ways to do that. So one of the things I would say is if your caster is dying a lot, if you're playing squishier casters, you can always play a hardier caster. Like, that's like upgrade to someone who doesn't die as much.
Like Bart.
Yeah, Bart's pretty hard to kill.
Yeah, yeah, you really got to be asleep at the wheel to get Bart killed.
I hate you guys.
But otherwise, I think every faction in the game can bring at least one smoke cloud. Yes.
I do think that's true.
Yeah, because all the...
Between Gorman, Swamp Gobbers.
I mean, Gorman and Gobbers, like, that's it, right? One of them works for every faction.
Yes.
Yep. Except for Retribution cannot.
That's true.
Retribution cannot bring any smoke, because that's when I was just trying to list Dojo for Assyria. I was just like, why is there no smoke?
So I guess that
Raven
brings us...
can make a cloud?
Yeah. That brings
but
us...
yes.
To,
in the list construction.
A second way to protect your caster. So we talked about threat ranges.
Mm-hmm.
The other way is to block line of sight.
Yeah, line of sight.
Yep.
And that's a much easier way than threat ranges because it doesn't require the same kind of eyeball skills. So you can find between a smoke cloud and an existing terrain piece, like a forest if you're not playing against eyeless sight, or a building of some kind, you can make a bunker for your caster to live in. So if you play a caster that has a long area of effect... And I'll talk a little bit about such a caster a little bit later on today. I have some dojo. You can just sort of have them exist behind that bunker and do their thing. Yeah. And maybe they come out to feet and you camp everything that turn just to be conservative. Or maybe not even.
So I have, like, to that effect, I play Zal quite often. And I always take Kriya with my Zal. And so I have this little, like, triangle formation I like to think of with two Ancestral Guardians and base-to-base running up the field and then Zal charging in behind them, basically just getting right into their butts. And then I have this nice little arm or def 12, arm 20, 10 wound guys in front of Zal that just really, really tough to remove them both without, unlike, and also the defensive strike is also pretty huge. It's come up quite often where my opponent tries to charge, and then I just get two defensive strikes on that target, and then...
So here's a caution I will give you. You can block line of sight with other models, and usually the hardier the model, the better, right?
Yeah.
So, like, blocking line of sight with a Colossal, actually, pretty good. The problem with, like, your example, is you have to be really careful for slams, particularly things with range slams. Really dangerous. Yep. So you have to identify those things. Mm-hmm. So you may have to adjust your plan a little bit. Mm-hmm. So it's a good habit to get into to block line of sight with other models. But the secondary part of that habit is to identify things which can slam your model or throw your model out of the way or over or into your caster. So, like, whenever I move my caster behind, like, a large base, like if I had it behind a Warjack, for example, I almost always immediately look for slam vectors because that's a really fast way to get your caster killed.
The other thing is sometimes when you think you're hiding safe behind LOS, especially for models, one thing, sort of a pro tip of the day, horse charges see over at least small base models.
Yeah, tall in the saddle.
Tall in the saddle.
Also hills. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, if you're here's another pro tip. If you're blocking line of sight to other models, and there's a hill on the other side of the board, make sure that your model is within 1 inch of the models that are blocking line of sight.
That might help. It doesn't always. Because if the model that steps on the hill is big enough, they just ignore everything.
Yeah, well, Colossals on the hill are actually a huge problem.
I mean, a large base on the hill ignores large bases, too. So
they ignore their own base size?
No, the only
their own and smaller.
No, I think it's only
smaller. It's their own and smaller. You can argue with me all day, but you'll be wrong.
Okay.
Otherwise, there'd be little point to be. Well, anyway. What was I going to look up? I was looking up something. tall in the saddle to make sure I got that right. So, yeah, LOS is very important. Threat ranges, identifying key pieces. I don't think it's necessary to switch or to start playing with tough-to-kill casters. I think learning with weaker casters actually makes you develop better habits. And then upgrading, because there's nothing wrong with being too cautious initially with a hardier caster. There's only really a problem being too incautious with a squishier one.
Yeah.
So unless you're getting really, really frustrated, unless you're having a lot of problems, I would not recommend, unless that's the caster you want to play. Like, I have no problems if you're just like, this is the caster I want to play. That's fine. But I wouldn't say that in order to learn the process of keeping your caster safe, you must start with somebody very hard to kill, like Captain Bartolo Matador.
Yeah. He's, oh, my God, that guy. Oh. So should we just explain why this is such a need-to-know topic for you, Josh? I feel like we should explain.
Feel free.
Oh man. First, Jeremy has his day on Crippled System, and now Colin gets to have his day on Muse.
I actually feel badly about that.
What's that?
That Jeremy got his day.
Why do you feel bad about that?
Because I feel like it's my fault.
Because we didn't go?
I didn't go. I feel like it's specifically my fault. Because as we've seen when we take other Muse members to tournaments in Iowa, they all get in round one or two.
Which is not acceptable. You agree with me on that, right?
I don't think that's acceptable for a tournament anywhere.
I mean, at a convention, if you get paired up poorly, you can lose in round one.
But all of them?
That's okay, you know what? You're right. Oh, yeah. Oh, you guys are...
There's zero chance we got the Mayhem Cup.
No, we're 100% winning the Mayhem Cup.
We just went... Okay, if we all went 0-1
look,
in round
Keith
one
and I
in
will
a
go
small
get,
tournament...
Look, F you guys. Keith and I will go get first and second if we have to go get that thing back.
Okay, for tall in the saddle, its base is smaller than their own. So for cavalry charges, they will ignore medium and smalls. Except, I guess, Resnik, who can also ignore larges. And Lilith, I guess. Oh, no, she doesn't have a melee weapon. No, she does.
Yeah, she's got those scything blades or
just mounts, though?
And the Kodoran Battle Engine.
It's got, like, doesn't it have, like...
But it's only with charge attacks, because the Kodoran Battle Engine doesn't have a non-mount weapon, does it? So it can't actually make charge attacks.
Oh, the Troll Battle Engine, though, right?
Just mounts.
Oh, am I too quiet? Oh.
Yeah. What's better?
There we go.
So, huge base cavalry that can actually make melee attacks might just be Resnik at this point.
I'm pretty sure that Lilith has more than just the mounts. I think she's got two, like, blades on her thing as well.
That she can actually buy.
Because I think there's mounts and then, like, regular melee weapons, I think. Right.
Some
possible,
mathematician's going to have to figure out if it's mathematically possible with 2 inches of reach.
To what?
And not have line of sight with your huge base. I guess you could have a line.
A whole like giant line of large base models.
Yeah, and then you could be in the nook and get charged. Like, it seems a little corner case, but it's good to know.
It's a
like,
thing that could happen, John. We alert the public to these things.
These new players, we want to give them more to think about. So let's see, that's Resnik over there. I need to be careful.
I can't hide specifically and only his charge attacks.
It's important for me to remember that I can't hide Bart between three nomads base to base to base from Resnik charging, because I will play that game and I will get Bart killed.
So Resnik will just up and one shot him.
Yeah, it will 100% happen because Bart is the easiest caster in the game to kill.
Okay. Actually, that's not true. It's only when you play him. That's from what I've seen.
It's 100% positive.
So we'll elaborate on this a little bit. I played against Josh earlier today.
How'd that go, Colin?
I played Epic Haley. Josh was utterly smashing my face. I didn't kill a single model, and then I killed Bart.
Not a single model. I was 3/4 of an inch out of the kill box. And Bart got killed.
Yep. Mm-hmm. His Vanguard got thunderbolted away, and then...
Well, it got TK'd,
and then thunderbolted away, and then...
And then at dice -4, the defender put 10 damage on me, and then at... dice -6, Thorn did 7 to force the tough check.
On a charge.
So about average, Dyson.
Yeah, I mean, average. Straight average, yeah.
Lilith does indeed have some non-mount melee weapons. However, they do not have reach. So she's going to have a little bit of a problem attacking over a large base.
She can do impact.
Impact
she
literally.
Through,
she doesn't
impact
have
through the large base model.
No, it's
either.
Only their charge attacks.
Battle engines don't have
only
reach all the time.
Attack.
No.
Why would they make a huge base caster without reach?
But
I just have this vision of her like, okay, I'm going to charge.
She can see you to charge
she can
you.
Declare
and she can,
the charge.
Exactly.
Kill the large base
and then
with
impact.
Impact
the large base to impact attack and
I
kill
I gotcha.
Them.
All right.
That would also happen to me.
That's
my
fine.
Baton nomads. My Baton nomads would 100% be murdered by her impact attack.
By the POW 12.
Yeah.
Unboosted impact.
Man,
so
just,
what Josh is saying is, in his own way, is that I believe if I can paraphrase for you, that you got it big time.
Yeah.
He diced the shit out of you.
It's not the worst dicing that I've received, but it was not probable. I mean, the real problem is just that, like,
why did you give him that shot?
I know, right? Because did you hear me? Yeah. I mean, I was 3/4 of an inch out of the kill box. I should have been. Less than 3/4 of an inch out of the kill box, I guess.
Or you could have put the Colossal right in front of you.
No, actually, that was impossible. I moved up my full amount on turn one in order to shoot Thorn and try mm-hmm. and knock him out of the game because mm-hmm. he moved Thorn up too far.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
On my next turn, I had to either sack my move or action because I was under Haley's feet.
Yep.
And chose to shoot to kill several models.
So it wasn't impossible.
You're right. I could have sacrificed the action of Bart's galleon for a turn in order to get it further
didn't
up the
table. Didn't you dice fail really hard?
Didn't I dice fail what?
With the galleon that turn?
No.
I thought you went to shoot some Thorn.
No, that was when you were
completely whining at me because the second round.
No,
of
the third round, he moved all the way as far up as he could and shot at Thorn and missed it. This was the other thing. Thorn was what killed me. Thorn was almost dead but had like all of his boxes available. So galleon moves up, gets 3 shots, has 2 focus to boost to hit. Need 8s. Because he's under D-cell. But just need 8s. 2 boosted 8s and 1 unboosted 8 and miss all 3 of them. So that Thorn was actually alive to kill him.
I didn't realize Josh was such a dice runner.
Says the pot of the kettle.
I think I've whined about dice in a really long time.
Also, you haven't played games.
But yes, you are correct. I could have sacrificed Galleon's action and moved it up so that Bart could have moved behind it later on.
I mean, clearly it would
that
have been a smart decision.
Had I understood how the game would turn out, I would have done that.
Foresight, Josh.
Foresight is... yeah, lately, I mean, I can talk about this potentially if we do Dojo, but I'm having a hard time keeping Bart alive, actually, in general lately.
So
Bart with Typhoon for a feet?
So I mean, he never dies on his feet.
My brain.
I just liked it because it was the little baby Velociraptor being pushed out of the nest, and then he went and killed Bart. It was so sweet.
yeah, Nigel was like, Colin, you can totally kill him.
So I actually have a question. Do you guys believe that Colossals made it harder to kill casters or easier to kill casters?
I don't
know. I think it makes it harder.
Yeah, way harder.
I don't think that it's a change.
No, it definitely gives them bunkers to hide behind that are harder to deal with. You cannot knock them down.
I mean, that part is nice, but... So as somebody who has played with... Right now is regularly playing with 2 Colossals. When you hide your caster behind the Colossal, you remove your caster from the game. Like,
I disagree with that statement completely.
You also get to play with Arc Nodes. I don't. So
what spells are you casting with Bart?
With Bart? I'm casting Baton, but with Bart, it's his feet.
Need to arc them that, huh?
With Bart, it's his feet. His feet loses about 4 inches of efficacy if he's always hiding behind.
He doesn't always have to hide behind it, just in situations where he's threatened.
He's threatened every turn of the game. That's what happens. Like, I mean, we can talk about this in Dojo. It's fine. But.
So, like, his list is actually really interesting because the easiest thing to kill in his Bart Galleon list is Bart.
That's not true. The Nests are the easiest things.
Well,
that's correct.
I mean, the highest priority targets outside of the Galleon is kind of just Bart. And if you can put shots on him continuously throughout the game.
Yeah, if you kill the Nests and Bart, or not Bart, the Galleon, then he doesn't really have enough work.
I mean, that's correct, but...
It's really hard to do.
So what I'm experiencing playing this list is that I have, like, some opponents will play the game, but I am frequently encountering other opponents who look at what Bart has and, like, look at three heavies and Galleon all under Batten, and they just decide that they are going to spend all of their army's activation on every turn to kill Bart. And so they just take their chances, like, every turn.
So do you think if Bart was behind the Galleon,
it would be harder sometimes he is.
It would be harder for that to happen?
Sometimes he is, and they still get shots on him. Let's say they only get a couple shots, and they put 2 points of damage that turn. And then the next turn, they get a couple shots, and they put 4 points. That's how my games are going. Every single game is going that way.
We've built P. Haley and Merc.
Yeah. I mean, it is the P. Haley problem all over again.
So that is something that's frustrating. I changed the list today. I like it better when I'm not playing, like, than what I was playing before. I put the Vanguard back in to add. So I just have two Nomads and then the Vanguard. And against a non-TK caster, I think I'm fine. Or against a caster that doesn't have Phantom Hunter. I also lost to...
Kalissa?
No, or not Phantom Hunter. Whatever it is that Gorshade 2 has.
Yeah, it's Phantom
Hunter. Is it Phantom Hunter? Yeah. Yeah. So I lost to a Kraken shooting Bart over, like, 4 turns.
Why didn't you kill a Kraken?
I tried. I kept rolling 2 shots with Galleon.
So that actually brings up the next kind of question here, which is, if you're having trouble keeping your caster alive, do you build more support into the list to keep your caster safe? So is there a room to explore with, like, dropping one of the Warjacks for Cloud Dwarves?
I am considering that as well, yeah. It's mostly about, like, trying to figure out more ways to block line of sight and angles on Bart, because I cannot, one of the big problems is... Like, for some casters, like, they take shots and you're, like, at your caster and put some damage on it. You're like, okay, that was good for them because now it removes my caster from a game because he's got to run back here and he's got to heal and, like, hide for, like, a turn or whatever, right? Like, you've done that with Kane before.
Yeah.
But Bart can't do that because if he does that, then it takes Batten off the table and then they actually can kill my battle group. Mm-hmm. So Bart has to stay in the fight. So
yeah,
he
it's
just
P. Haley. He's committed to the plan.
Yeah, so
he has to be up there and barriering or everything just goes to hell.
Exactly.
Yeah, but Bart has way better defensive stats than P. Haley.
He's 13-19. That's not better than Haley. Right?
I think
she's a 16-14, right?
It's better against
she's
things
really
like
an 18-16 against range though. A lot of times.
Yeah.
No, Haley won.
Haley won.
Oh, Haley won. Oh, never mind.
Usually,
she's got 14 armor.
Usually,
she dies to the most random things ever. Bart doesn't die to random things.
Mm-hmm.
Bart dies to things you should be able to predict because it's got to have a power of like 15 before it starts.
Well, like in my game with Josh, that was pretty tough. I mean, like having a defender walk 9 inches like laterally, and then having a Vanguard or Nomad get pushed out, or like
TK dominate. Like, I mean, admittedly, I've been playing against casters that can put better vectors than regular casters lately, so that's part of my frustration.
I mean, I didn't quite realize Epic Haley's, because I look at Epic Haley for some reason, I think scenario caster, just because I see Keith play Epic Haley a lot, and
she's really good at that.
She's
amazing assassination caster.
Yeah, I didn't realize until I started playing her a little bit that her assassination is really legit.
Yeah,
like
that's how Ben used to do it.
Yeah, just I mean TKs and time bomb and all that great stuff. It's kind of amazing.
Yeah, and jacks that go a million inches. And
Yep.
I mean, I won one of my games at TempleCon. Just Thorn runs, arcane bolt, die. Like it just kills you.
Thorn has achieved Mog status for me. He has achieved Mog status. I hate him with a passion. I hate Thorn so much.
I love him
so much. I hate Thorn.
It just tickles me that these guys touched you so bad in the last 2 days. Because you've played like 5 games in the last 2 days.
I played 5 games in the last 2 days. 4 with Bart.
And you're just so bitter.
And Bart has... Oh, no. 3 with Bart. And Bart died twice. He killed Siege the other time. That's actually... Colin and my games have all ended in caster assassination.
I was the first one who touched him with Thorn.
Yeah.
That's true.
I'm starting to understand why they struggled so much in Iowa City.
Yeah.
I mean, if you just leave your caster out there to get killed, you can't beat anybody. So we'll work on it. We'll work on it with you guys.
Yeah.
It's cool.
So, yes, I do think building support into the list is legitimate. The question is how much support you can afford to build in, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's always the question, is at what point does your list become ineffective because you're too paralyzed with fear? Butcher 3 is an interesting study in how much support is too much support, because for him the answer is there really isn't a point at which,
because he does so much work,
because he does, because he can, yeah, he can like eraser of doom most of the table himself.
Yeah, Butcher, my list, it's almost like the pirate ball in terms of support. I mean, it's like literally 6 solos or whatever dedicated to just babysitting him, and then it totally works. It's actually the easiest.
Yeah, because he does all the work, and you just have to make sure he doesn't get killed.
Whereas you find if you do that with other casters, sometimes your list is just this atrocious pile of do nothing. Like if you do that with P. Haley, you're just like, God, what have I done?
Right. Yeah, I mean that's the problem I was running in building with Magnus, right? Like, was that there was
Magnus, another good example.
So much support. Yeah.
Like 14-17 wants to get up the table defeat. You're like, this is not good. As I was like, more support, more support, more support. And then you're like, oh wait, he doesn't.
Defeated. Their army can't move, and I can't kill anything.
So one thing I might consider for your Bart list, and I know you love Gorman in the Gorton list, and it's really good in your Gorton list, but just that single cloud for 2 points.
It's possible.
Because then you can cloud up right next to the galleon, and then Bart can be forward.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And just have line of sight blocked to him.
I mean, that's how I was operating with the... with the Vanguard today, is you just tuck the Vanguard up there, and then Bart tucks in between the two of them, so he can be up and not have to be behind to cut off on his feet.
Yeah.
And he can be there, and he's got line of sight blocked, and he's got a shield guard.
And if you set it up right, you can make it impossible for the Vanguard to be slammed over you as well.
But slamming it only gives him LOS. He's immune.
Yeah, I mean, to knock him because of Batten. But yeah, you're correct. You just put him in that, like, just past the front arc, and the Bart is just past the back arc. So I like it. Like I said, I think the Vanguard is maybe enough. The Cloud Dwarves maybe. Like, it's a unique situation playing against Haley. But, on the other hand, I fully intend for this list to be played against Signar and the Haley players. So...
And Haley's very popular in Signar.
Right.
So, I mean, when you play against Signar...
I will see a lot of Haley. So, given that, maybe Cloud Dwarves are better because they don't go away. Maybe Gorman's better because the Cloud doesn't go away.
Also, like, considering that assassination-focused Signar casters will be incorporating Terran more often now.
Also true.
So, yeah. model-based LOS blocking is less effective.
That's very true.
Actually, Signar is really scary in the assassination game.
Yeah. So,
yeah, they've got 3 assassination dynamo, and then they still have, like... And that's when
So you're saying 3, so you're saying Siege...
Siege, Haley 2, and Kane 2.
Yeah. And then if you wanted to just throw Kaer Sloan in there for good measure, but, they haven't even... They have, like, a B tier. Like, all their guys just are sort of threatening. Even P. Kane is sort of threatening. But, yeah, those 3...
Absolutely, P. Kane threatens.
Nemo 3. Nemo 3 can get you 2.
Yeah.
Bounce Lightning. Mm.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, like, their whole faction. And then because they have access to Terran and... But, like, Haley, the movement shenanigans are crazy. Terlin Durassi just being in any list. And then, of course, Foxhole. That's crazy.
No, it's like with Striker 3, it's like, oh, you left your caster too close to gun mages. Charge, you're dead.
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, that's actually an interesting thought. I think the most powerful effect in the game is movement.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I also agree.
Yeah.
That's why on that Scornoset episode when Trevor was like, Scorn doesn't do anything that breaks the rules. I was like, they have all the movement stuff that breaks the rules. Like, that's the most, like, insane stuff to break the rules is movement related.
Yeah.
The thing that frustrates me the most about Scorn is that goddamn Kriya. The Kriya is so good.
It is extremely good, yeah.
You just purify that off.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't bother me at all.
So I actually, we've talked a lot about War Machine and how to, like, incorporate their kind of tools to your list to keep casters safe. Kind of. What about hordes?
Just
like,
camp.
Hordes factions.
Oh, camp three transfers.
A couple transfers plus a cloud goes a really long ways, because a lot of times when you have LOS partially or mostly obstructed, whenever you're looking at assassinations, it's most often like one or two attacks that are going to get there.
Yeah.
So like transfers can quickly take assassinations off the table. There's really, in my experience, sort of a specialized group of casters a specialized group of models that that can effectively assassinate warlocks. So you kind of have to know what those are. Like, oh dear God, it's Aran. Like, he can kill my warlock. Yeah. Like, I'll get pulled out of this cloud and
death by a million paper cuts.
Death by paper cuts and or a mage hunter assassin. Like, something awful is going to happen to you.
Mm. Stay away from McBain.
Yeah. You have to watch out for the grievous wounds. You have to...
We're just three Eris now.
Yep, Eris three.
Warlocks are, in general, safer
three now
in the early game.
Hmm. Yeah, I definitely don't disagree. Because I know I've run into a lot of problems trying to teach one of our locals up in Ames about keeping his casters safe. Because he's been getting, like, Makeda 2 killed and, like, Xerxes killed. And it's just... It's something. It's not easy. It's not easy to teach.
Well, the thing about hordes that I see happen a lot is that people are like, oh, I can do this, and this. So they, and then you have no fury. Like,
yep.
You have to keep the beasts in check and keep your caster in check a little bit for a while. Ooh. While you remove those threatening pieces.
I mean, to be fair, it's the same thing I see with people that play Denny.
Yeah,
they do too much, and then they get her killed. Either version, both versions of Denny, they're like, I think I'm pretty safe. I'm gonna cast this one Hellmouth, or you know, or squeak out an extra Venom or something silly, and then she falls over dead.
Yeah. Like, camping is a completely viable thing to do.
That's probably something we should talk about. Camping is extremely viable. Like, sometimes you just got to go man mode. And, like, I'll take Krios, I'll put Defender's Ward on himself, pull one off Thrax, camp everything,
yeah,
and then go forward.
I mean, I think that there are some casters in the game that are viable just because they camp well. And, like, having a caster that is super. Like, one of the things about Lich, like, if Lich never excarnates, right? And all he does is occasionally cast a Parasite, and then the rest of the game just can't be killed. Like, that's really valuable. Like, to play a caster that just literally can't be killed is a very valuable thing in the game.
Yeah, and actually, back through the archives, if you can find them, Walter wrote a good series of articles about the value and the strategy behind camping and what makes a good camping caster and what makes a bad camping caster. It's actually a really fun subject, because there are casters that can camp to infinity that it doesn't matter because you can't threaten with those casters.
Right.
Like, honestly, although I'm of sort of two minds about Siege on that subject, because he's got, like, the one turn, like, skadoosh where he's horrifying. But a lot of the time, if he's going, especially against another, like, hardy caster, Siege can camp to, what, 26 armor or something obscene
like
that?
26, he's, yeah, impossible to kill.
Like, 14, 26, and just, we're like, eh, it's a Siege. Like, he's got a POW.
Or he can upkeep Foxhole, right, and be, like, 18, 25.
Yeah. Sure.
Also pretty good.
He can get up to 27 if he has a Squire and Arcane Shield.
Arc Shield gets him to 26.
Well, yeah.
So I guess 27 with a Squire pull.
Yeah.
There's a better example of this that I'm just spacing on it, of casters that can really, really camp hard, but then don't do anything with that.
Vindictus,
with that
maybe?
Camp. Maybe? Yeah, that's a pretty good example.
Vindictus is a pretty good example, classic example of the caster that just...
He's a really good example, because he's like POW 11 or 12?
Yeah, he's like 15, 16 with Defender's Ward, so it's like 17, 18 plus a 5 camp plus a rack. It's like 18... Or 17-24. You're like, I can't kill that. I just can't do it.
Right.
And then, but you're like, oh, I'm just going to go stand in front of him. Like, it's not a big deal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas a butcher doesn't camp quite as hard, but you're like, oh, dear God. I have, like, something's, it's a butcher in front of me. Like,
right.
Oh, my God. The world is going to end if I don't deal with this. So there's definitely... Camping is a really interesting subject, because sometimes you do it just to stay alive, and sometimes you'll do it to try to force your opponent into making a poor gambit to kill your caster, or sometimes you'll do it just to be like, next turn my caster gets to do something sweet. And trying to force your opponent into backing off with a camping caster is a whole nother strategic subject. Mm-hmm. Probably do that at some point.
Yeah, that's really like where Siege, that's really the value of his camp is taking the board.
If he hasn't feeded yet.
Exactly, he hasn't feeded yet. You take the board, people are like, ooh, and they back up a little bit. And, kinda, and then you get to take scenario or do other things with him. But. Yeah.
Siege is really scary.
Yeah.
But even with just his, like, because he actually is still fairly effective in camp as long as he doesn't get engaged.
Yep.
Because he just camp ground pound, like every turn camp ground pound.
Mm-hmm. And he's got rangers that ground pounds off the hook with just a ranger near there.
Yep.
Just a red 8 ground pound with the ranger, right? Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Just like dropping a 4-inch AoE of pretty much auto-hitting pow 12s.
You don't get aiming bonus for ground pound, do you?
No.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
No aim, no artillerist either.
No aim, no artillerist.
Keeping score at home.
Mm-hmm. But yeah. And then, like, so the there are a lot of casters out there that the camping is their strat.
Right.
Like Terminus. Terminus is 100%. His strategy is camp up the board
until
he can do something relevant. My issue with Terminus is of the camping casters, I don't think he's one of the most dangerous.
Really?
He's extremely dangerous to your caster, but it's extremely easy to deny that because you know exactly how far he goes. And sure, he has wings or whatever, so you just don't ever let him get your caster.
He has like a 12-inch threat, right?
13 with
Six,
Death
nine,
Ride.
11, 12 with Death Ride, 15 if you give him Corbeau.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Corbeau.
So you take out Corbeau. She's not hard to get rid of.
Yep, not terrible.
Not in his list.
Can't she sucker on all the models in his list? That are
living models.
Oh, is it living?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Which Terminus doesn't often.
Right.
Sometimes you'll see someone like curveball and throw some blood gorgers in there, which isn't the worst idea ever.
Yeah. I didn't realize it was living. It's never come up for me, so I haven't paid that much attention to it.
The other thing you can do is you can control whether you kind of trigger Corbeau.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah. You just got to be careful.
Yeah, I mean, Terminus has its good matchups and bad matchups, but if you both have, like, something scary in your list that threatens Terminus and your caster can threaten a smaller camped Terminus, you have the tools to deal with him. You just have to set up, it's like playing chess, you just have to set up protected situations where it's like, oh, you can come and go Terminus on this thing, but then I'm going to probably going to kill you. Yeah. You just have to manage his... You have to... The tricky part with Terminus playing against him is if you only have the 2 or 3 threats, is managing him up through his feet turn to the point where you can do that.
Yep.
It's like the Terminus gambit a lot of the times is like get huge with his feet and put himself in a threat range of your caster. Like next turn run at your caster, still be huge. And then you are unable to get away.
Yep.
Yep. Or the same thing, but during those 2 turns, he's removing the big pieces that can kill him above his normal 24 camp. So he's good as a good camping caster. I just don't think he's the most dangerous of them. Now it's obviously Butcher
3. 3 Butcher. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he's just not.
Butcher 2 is another one that's extremely, extremely threatening because of
high defense.
Butcher 2. He does not
have. Yeah.
Butcher 2, what you were going to say, is he's because of the swim.
Yeah, he can swim, and that's terrifying.
Madrak 2.
Madrak 2, because he's like one of the hardest to kill.
Yeah.
Yeah, him and Borka.
Borka again. Yeah, Borka is another one that...
He doesn't even need to camp.
He's harder to kill than pretty much any caster in the game. But my only issue with him is he's personally not incredibly dangerous.
Like, he's not going to wreck your, like, high armor heavies, but he's dangerous to most casters.
His big thing that he's got going on is he does that huge camp in the middle of the table, siege style, and then he just casts, like, mosh pit. So if they do overcommit, he just mosh pits and everybody... It's, like, a tough board to deal with at that point. But
kind of. But, yeah. I mean, he's not super threatening. And we've got him.
I've had him just, like, whiffing on Fiona. It's like, ugh. You know? Like, I didn't whiff much, but you know.
Whiffing on Fiona?
Is he pal 15
under her feet turn?
No. Just, you know, he's, like, just making attacks. And he's got mosh pit going. But you cast mosh pit, and that's, like, a lot of your focus.
Is he 16?
14? I think he stone strengths to 15, rages.
I was going
to
say, he's a 15 whenever I've been hit with him. I remember that. Chad has killed Gordon with
pretty common to see the Mauler with him. And if there's a Mauler on the table, then he gets upgraded, obviously, a threat level. Mm-hmm. It's like every attack is boosted, basically.
ThreatCon.
So yeah, camping is something that, as far as from a defensive standpoint, is it's very rare for me to be on a zero camp with any caster, Hordes or War Machine. Like, a zero camp is because even just like having the two or three focus stack next to your caster will often off put some would be assassins.
That's actually. Go ahead.
All right, I think that's. There's been times where I've sat on zero camp because I know Eris is across the table and I'm playing War Machine, and I had no way to deal with her at the moment. So I know that I'm going to get shot anyway, so I might as well do as much work with my caster as possible.
I'm not sure that's a good idea. You're just basically seeding that Eris hits your caster, that she's in range and she hits your caster, like, by going to zero camp.
Which can be then bad because then as long as I'm out to shoot something else.
As long as I recognize the threat ranges that can still get to my caster.
Sure, but it's also, like, you also make your opponent do it and roll the dice, right?
You also make it so they can't aim.
A lot of times I will camp to focus for the chance to kill Eris. Like, if they're coming in to just take a pot shot with Eris. Mm-hmm. Like, on a turn when they don't have other threats, fantastic.
Or the threats are minor.
Unless it's Eris 1, then not fantastic. Yeah.
What I was going to say is, it's interesting, like, prior to this two list pair I've been playing lately, I was usually like, when playing Damiano is usually on like a two camp, usually, so camping up to 15, 18, which is pretty good, maybe within a Surefoot or whatever, maybe with Rothanante around, but
Bork is 15 before any help.
Okay, I thought he was around a 15, but anyway, this two list pair I'm playing, the casters are actually identical. And are frequently on zero camp because Gorton has to upkeep his spells, and then he'll either sometimes he'll camp one, but he'll either like put out a rock wall or he'll give something to the Earthbreaker, and then he's just like a 13-19, which means that having base 19 armor means that you're like we were talking about at the beginning of the segment. Mm-hmm. You're like, gun mages don't care. Like, I guess
Mage Hunter Strike Force don't care.
I mean, yeah, like less than most casters do.
But like, still cares.
No, I said he was talking about Gorton.
Gorton, yes. And that's Bart is actually, like, it wasn't until I played a couple games I was like, I'm playing with two Gortons because Bart under Batten goes to 13-19.
No knockdown.
and he never, like, I never have focused to camp with Bart. Like, it's just, particularly with this list that has four Warjacks in it. Mm. Like,
so the zero camp is an interesting thing because often, despite any spell effects that you may have up, despite terrain features, like, the zero camp is an enticing thing.
That's true.
Whenever your opponent's like, how much are you camping? And you answer with zero, you can guarantee that they're starting to go through their options for assassination at that point. Even when you say two, even if you're Denegra, so that makes you like a 16-16, which is still not super great. They're like, oh, you're on a two camp. Like, so a lot of people will just mentally move on at that point. But like, that zero, when you say that zero, they start thinking about it. I'm always very hesitant to go to a zero camp unless, because you know that that's the case, you can entice people into making poor decisions on a zero camp. Like, this happened to me once. I was playing against Steven from Atlanta. I think he was playing Epic Striker. It's like, how much are you camping? Zero. But what you don't realize is that because all those stupid spell effects are up, Striker is still like 16, 18 against ranged, or 16, 21, or some stupid, like,
just, yeah, yeah.
Just awful. Something just awful. And so you're like, yeah, well, I got some gunshots here. One or two of them is boostable. Like, we should get this job done against a zero camping caster. And then you're like, oh, God, no, I'm not even going to get close.
Yep.
And you've just expended, like, a whole bunch of effort to do nothing. So the two pieces of advice I would give based on camping is that don't go to zero unless you know you're safe. And when you're from the other side of the table, just ask what the defensive stats are rather than how much they're camping. Think about the actual numbers. Don't get trapped by the numbers.
Also, I almost never camp. I spend all of my focus every turn, pretty much. Even when I play Rask, I spend all my fury. But I am extremely careful with my positioning.
I was going to say, like, what's better, like, it was like we talked about at the very beginning of this segment, what's better than camping to dissuade assassination is literally being out of threat ranges.
Yep.
Yeah, I make it really, really hard for people to get my casters.
It's also, when you mentioned Rask, it's hard, like, as somebody who plays all focus 6 or less casters, because that's what my faction has. Like, it's a lot harder to camp when you're focus 6 than when you're focus 7. Like, it just is.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Actually, if you want a really good example, when the endgame gaming video goes up of my game with Brian White of protecting your caster in a very dynamic, dangerous situation, like when you're playing against Lich with Helldivers, it is really scary.
Yeah. Yep. Can see that.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, that was a good game.
Yeah. That's a really good game to watch, like, watch me protect my caster, because I'm always, like, cognizant of where the Helldiver is, where I can get a cloud to block line of sight to Lich. So even if the Helldiver somehow miraculously gets a corner case slam on me, because it's really hard to stop the slam vectors, because he's just got to run a model to slam over your caster, and he gets to bring the Helldiver up within 3.
Yeah, within 3 of its location, so it's, like, 12 inches dangerous.
Yeah.
From the slam.
Yeah, but I mean, it's just 12, all the different angles.
So it's like from the actual marker, it's like 12, 13, 3, 9. Yeah, it's like 9 plus, or no, it's only speed 5. So 8, 11 plus base size of the slam target, plus mm-hmm. D6.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's a good long slam.
That's terrifying.
From that point of the marker. It's like a control range.
Yeah. So what I was doing was blocking line of sight to Lich so that even if he feeded, the feeded models would have a hard time getting vectors onto my caster even if she got knocked down. And Brian recognized that too. So, like, I just literally never gave him an assassination.
Yeah.
And it was really hard.
Yeah. It is, because you want your caster to do things in the game. Sometimes you just have to cede the fact that, and I'm sure your caster may still have been doing things in the game, but...
Well, it was Killbox.
Oh, well, that makes it really, really hard.
Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. For
so,
sure.
So, I mean, then I'm kind of forced to kind of
be... Sorcerer's an interesting caster. She's of a mold, though, that's like, you know, you can start on one corner, and then... I mean, I thought, like, you were kind of sucking that Helldiver over that corner.
Yeah.
And then if the game had kept going without it ending on scenario, you could have been to the other corner. Like, as soon as he dives down and goes towards you, you're like, whoop, you know, you charge one of your own models on a balance charge and then you cyclone over.
Yep.
And you're just completely gone. And then he's got to, you know, you'd be amazed at how far you can cross the field with her.
Oh, no, I was definitely playing the game of, like, I'm going to score one of these flags and win.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's kind of some of our random ramblings on the subject of keeping your caster safe.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think if there's anything else we want to mention before moving on there. Gentlemen,
practice.
I would just if it's a huge, huge deal. Bart's a good example of it. Is it just a guy who affects the table without having to affect the table? And like Peace of Arius is another one of those guys who affects the table without having to affect the table. But like Kane is kind of a clever way of doing it. Like Epic Kane can affect it from pretty much downtown with just 3 magic bullets on a unit that's like high accuracy, and then he gets to basically do 3 pow twos every turn without ever being even remotely close. I mean, you could always just move up and then Thunderstrike back or whatever. That's I don't know. He's kind of a neat caster for that. And that's, like, Sorcerer just got me thinking about that was, like, yeah, players, they just have to, like, you put a man cannon on a caster, and they have to shoot it every turn.
Yeah.
I'm not getting value out of my caster.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what? You don't have to get value out of your caster to win the game.
I mean, right. I think they make a value decision of, I get a free Spirit Fang or whatever, you know, the standard range 12, pow 12 magic, or, you know.
Yeah.
So, like, well, that's even cheaper, because I cast for free, so I can actually spend my 2 focus normally to cast a boost attack and damage rolls, and, yeah, but then you're 12 inches away from, you know.
Something.
Yeah, from whatever you were doing, you know.
Yeah, that's one of the harder things for me to learn initially was just to like your caster is your avatar, right? Like this is you play and like you want to like get it in there and you've got these sweet spells and you want to do all these things because this is the model that does the most. And sometimes you just have to like swallow that urge and be like, this turn my caster is going to be safe. That is what I'm going to do.
I mean, it is okay for Bart to be, you know, 8 inches behind the galleon and just battening in the early game.
Not in this list, but... Because then, mules. Then you dismantle the nomads.
Mm-hmm. Or, yeah, nomads. It depends on where the heavies are. But a lot of times, like the old school, when I used to watch Jim play, Bart, he would always joke about it because it would be like, turn one, and Bart camps a bunch and charges forward or whatever. And this was back before the battle groups were big.
Right.
But it would be like, turn two, charge and feet. turn three, run away. Literally, run.
I mean, my Bart pretty much always backs up after 8 feet, that's for sure. But
it's gotten harder with the bigger battle groups. So I'm interested to talk more about that list and try to decide whether or not the big battle group is too much of a push in the P. Haley direction of just have to kill my caster. Like, you have no other outs.
Right.
And whenever you put someone in that situation where they don't believe they have any other outs, like, they will find a way.
Yeah.
They will find a way.
Does that open up another discussion that perhaps we have a blind spot and maybe we should be going for more assassinations?
I mean, I know that I have had my caster killed significantly more in the week and a half that Nigel has been here than in like the last 3 months. So
all caster killed 2014, so.
That's true.
I'm up to speed.
That's fair.
So one thing the last thing I wanted to mention is to be wary of your opponent's caster and like just. There are some casters out there that just do assassinations so well, like whether it be Makeda 2 or Ron or something like that. You need to know what your caster does or what your opponent's caster does.
From like a brand new player perspective, obviously get to know the mega assassins first. But as you get, and since if we're letting Miami take care of the baby chicks, we can talk to the ones that are sort of flying.
All right, we'll raise them right, Keith. All right.
Yep. So we're going to have to undo everything they did.
Once you get once you get past the point where you've got, like, oh, that's an epic Makeda, and stupid Molokarn comes 22 inches and kills me, or, oh, that's Ron, and I'm never, ever safe no matter what, and, oh, that's
Lich, too. He piled for all his own guys, charged forward, feeded, and killed me.
Once you get past, like, the identifying the mega assassins, because I feel like even when I go to tournaments playing one of the mega assassins, Even in the early rounds, like, everybody's just like, oh, God, and they hide their caster, like, a jillion miles away. Like, getting assassinations with those guys is sometimes harder than getting assassinations with the mid-tier assassination casters that people don't expect it from. Like, just watching that game with Ashlyn today.
Yeah.
It's just like, Ashlyn is a perfect example of, like, oh, she's just, like, a little girl. Like, none of her attacks are particularly powerful, whatever. Her threat ranges aren't exceptional. And all of a sudden, it's like two hand cannons to the face. You're dead. And you're like, oh.
Particularly because she's a virtuoso. So can charge and take her two attacks. And people also, like, they look at her stat line and they're like, oh, she's PAL 11, whatever. She's a PAL 11 weapon master, as it turns out. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So it's really, and those are the ones that are going to catch you. A lot of the times, you identify the worst of the bunch, and then it's the stragglers that come in and get you.
Yeah.
Like, it is the Karas Lones, it is the neat random Nemo 3 assassinations. It's the goofy stuff that ends up getting you later on, or just when people identify a turn where they're like, I can get three boosted attacks on your caster, and you're not camping enough, and you're like, yep, that happened.
Yep.
Or just anything run by Craig Conroy.
Well, I mean, we're 50-50 to lose.
That's what I love, is that the Craig Conroy is a top of 2 50-50, and the Tom Gwan is a top of 2 100%.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, they probably both love that. For different reasons. We can't really say 100%.
Yeah, sometimes he forgets to overrun.
Sometimes he forgets to cast overrun.
It's a 99.9er.
Next time he casts overrun.
Actually, I really hope I get to play Tom Gwan at Mayhem Cup, and I hope he doesn't kill me on 2, so I can just be like, not on your list, buddy.
I mean, you can probably make sure you just, like, killbox yourself.
So. Yeah.
Just, like, cede 2 control points to you, you can't kill me. Because Tom Gwan's not going to turn those 2 control points into a victory. you can give him 4 control points for kill box, and he's not going to use them.
It's like the super strategy. Tom's like, where's your caster at? I didn't deploy it. How are you going to win?
I am playing this game without a war caster. Yes, my battle group is all inert.
What are you going to do now, Tom?
I feel like I am now advantaged.
Wait, I can't kill your caster and win? Nope.
So yeah, I mean, there's definitely more to talk about there. We'll probably return to the subject the next time Josh gets one of his casters killed.
So tomorrow?
I do have a question, though, Keith.
Shoot.
John, Why is a pirate's favorite game Chinese checkers?
Why, Josh?
Because it's played on a starboard.
Wait.
Can we get Crump back?
That was a good one. That's a good one. I liked it.
A starboard. Oh, God. I've loved Colin. Oh, sorry, Lance.
So, this is a topic that we're going to jump into here briefly that's been on our list or been on our list of things to talk about since Colin started doing our podcast topics.
Yep.
Looking at Signar, what do they have other than their colossal that breaks armor?
Their other jacks.
We're basically time traveling back to Signar Mue here.
Stormclad is a beater.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of their jacks are better quality than you would expect.
And they also have some pretty good, like, the Nemos have some pretty good strength
some
buffs.
Some of them are not.
Okay, Thunderhead's not exactly a beat stick, but...
A lot of the jacks are not beaters. A lot of them have a hard time getting there. So, I mean, there are definitely problems. I don't look at the war jacks when I'm asking myself how do I solve armor problems unless I'm playing a Nemo or a Haley. Or Nemo or Haley 2, specifically.
Potentially now with Striker 3, you might be looking at your Warjacks.
Right. With Striker 3, it's a different story. Like, yeah. He's just like, everything. The answer is everything.
Right.
And you're like, oh, okay, thanks, Striker. Like, that's pretty easy. I can manage anything.
Yeah.
Like, I can put something in the list. He's like, make sure it's Signar, though. And you're like, whoa, that's weird.
Well, there's... even without Striker 3, Striker 2 is also an answer in and of... himself, like I've seen him.
Yeah, he's got the that ability with the +2/+2 and the warjacks and
positive
the positive charge.
Yep.
Striker 2 can also get some work done on that variety.
I mean, Striker 2 is a very frustrating caster.
I agree. 100%. You and I have similar feelings on Striker 2, as it turns out.
The strategy that sort of works better than you think it does for taking down armor is... take little bites, like soften them up over a couple turns, and then your stuff that you don't think of as armor cracking might just get there.
You're talking like, particularly with things like a defender cannon shot here.
Defender cannon shot here, hunter there. Like the hunter is an exceptional piece
right, yeah.
for spot removal and or just like ping, like do 5 damage to a heavy and all of a sudden like all the math can change
yeah.
for what it takes to kill it. And then things like... I don't know. Like the sword knights get a lot more relevant mm-hmm. at that point.
Yeah, when you only have to deal, like when it's an arm 21 and you only have to deal 10 to 15 boxes instead of 30.
Yeah.
Completely changed. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Yep. So, I mean, that's kind of where I was left when I was playing Signar before Stormwall was like, I guess I will like smash it with a long gun or CRA this turn and then have them break up to start killing infantry on their second shot because it's still pretty far away. And then we'll reevaluate where we're at next turn.
Yeah, I mean, I saw you smash a lot of jacks where you're just like, long gunner salvo 1,
yeah.
long gunner salvo 2, long gunner salvo 3, long gunner salvo 4.
It's like long gunner salvo 1 or like give him 1 or 2 this turn, and then like it runs at me. I'm like, eh, it's a little too close. Thunderstrike it away and hit it again, and like next turn it's like, all right, now I can't get it away from me again, but it's down to like 12 boxes, so we'll just shoot it with long gunners until it's not there anymore.
Speaking of the Thunderstrike, Signar is uniquely suited, with the possible exception of the Highborn contract, and the ability to ignore armor by pushing it away with gun mages.
Which is with the advent of Colossals, that became a gamble rather than a good plan.
Sure.
It used to be pretty reliable. Nowadays, it's a little questionable because when you talk about armor, it's usually crap. It's a conquest, or
right.
It's a
or
IR
the most Hyperion. Terrifying thing is just a Tiberian,
or it could be a Tiberian, which is a disaster.
Actually, IR Hyperion is the one that probably scares me the most.
Yeah,
really,
too many boxes.
It does have the most boxes.
64.
Right? Yeah,
Too many boxes.
Is it the second most? Is Conquest
No, it's the most. Okay. But Conquest can never get an armor buff.
No, I know.
Yeah.
I know.
Other than Hamkovich's feet. No, Hyperion has the most boxes because of its ginormous force shield. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, kind of, caster-wise, like, oh, the best example of the, like, ping-to-go piece is Karis Lone. So good.
Yeah.
She's just, like, she's the unexpected attrition monster, because she's just like, well, what I do for my army is I charge one of your heavies with two Bane Thralls every turn.
Right.
From downtown. And you're like, wait, what?
Every turn. And I do it completely safely, because then I walk 6 inches back.
So is Refuge on hit?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So basically you're saying her strategy is to shoot, what, range 8?
16 with if she fire groups, 14 fire. Normally.
She never has to fire group.
It's usually 14. So and it's 20 inches dangerous.
So in a list like that that you're looking to just kind of hit and run, do you care about putting like an Ion on Holt or a Gorman or a Ragman in?
I mean, you can always bring the armor fixers. They are much less relevant when you're doing pings because they only are really good when you go volume of attacks.
Okay.
Like, because Ayana is good when you're like, I have 10 guys that are going to charge it. So if their expected value is 2 damage each, you've just doubled the amount of damage that you're putting in. If you're going with, like, Sloane is going to hit you for 6 to 8 damage, going from 6 to 8 to 8 to 10 is like, eh.
Particularly when you usually are going to have to give away Ayana to do something like
that. Yeah, a lot of times Ayana is a one-hit wonder. So
she almost always is.
Yeah.
Your opponent has to kind of be asleep at the wheel, or you have to be Haley too.
Or be using Cloud Dwarfs.
I mean, yeah. Usually when she gets to, her first one's kind of irrelevant. It's like on Boom Howlers or something, where it helps, but it wasn't like.
Right.
It wasn't the nut stomp. Yeah, she doesn't get to harm the Colossal twice, usually.
Correct.
You hope not.
Both sides hope.
Yeah, yeah, you hope. Going for the one harm and done plan.
So, I mean, and this isn't really something that people are doing anymore, because they will just default to the Stormwall. Like, there is no, like, oh, just take these. They will kill everything that has armor in Signar. They don't have that option, which is why there were so many complaints for so long before Stormwall came out. Because Stormwall is the, oh, take this. It will beat the armor to death. Most of the time. Sometimes he gets killed. And then you're really super screwed. So I kind of like the... I did kind of enjoy the, like, the ping, ping, ping. Like, we'll get there eventually. It's gotten less good with the other Colossals around, especially with how some of them are kind of focused on infantry removal, like the long gunner plan.
Yeah, took a hit with the galleon, and
because they'll just be like, drift some blast damage into your long gunners, and you're like, well, this is going poorly.
Yeah, this plan was good 3 drifts ago.
The 6-man CRA is nowhere near as good as the 10. Nowhere near as good. They're still pretty good at killing infantry, but we're Signar, and Pekane did that already.
Yeah, Pekane already killed all of them.
So basically, a big reason why I wanted to talk about this is because my favorite piece in Signar is the Thunderhead, and his ability to remove infantry is great, but he also has to be able to take down heavies.
Yeah, this was something that I would sort of, whenever X person starts to argue with John, I go into dreamland. And I was thinking about this earlier today when Josh and John were arguing about which objectively was the best of the journeyman warcasters.
Yeah.
Because I think, like, in a vacuum, like, if you take all other things out of the equation, Thunderhead might be one of, if not, like, really easy. You make a strong argument for Thunderhead being one of the strongest of the Apotheosis Warjacks, because that pulse is freaking ridiculous.
Yeah,
it's freaking crazy, insane, ridiculous.
He also has an insane gun.
Yeah, he's got a really good gun, but then you like...
The pulse sustained attack thing, the first time that happened to me, I was just like, what are you talking about? I was like, that is not a real rule.
I hit you with the gun, and now I'm buying
like,
an attack.
No. And they cannot. No one could have been so dumb as to write that rule.
But you look at him in amongst the Signar faction where it's just like dealer's choice for killing infantry, and you're like, oh, his threat range is actually a little unimpressive. Like, Crix would take that guy every day of the week. They'd be like, Deathjack, get out of here. Like, you're sweet and all, but I'll take a biofield that can't be killed
before he pounces. Crix would take him until they realized, wait, it kills all my guys too.
Yeah, it might not be as sweet.
I would I would put Gorshade 1 back on the table if I had Thunderhead in play. I'd be like, stealth the Thunderhead, here we go. I think the Banes can go play over here. Thunderhead's going to come over here and kill everything. It's going to be fine.
Yeah, he's just going to be like, this is how the Butcher does it.
So Tixus Raiders can charge things from outside of the pulse range way past him. Like, that's fine, too. The Tixus will just hang out behind him.
Sure.
Like, we'll get something happening. Like, I would absolutely play that guy in Crix.
Karcha would love to tow that guy around. That could be legit.
But yeah.
I mean, he'd be really good in, let's be honest, he'd be really good in Minoth too, because it would fix his biggest weakness.
So I love Thunderhead in a vacuum, but you put him into Signar where you're like, my big problem is everything kills infantry and nothing hits it after death. He's like, oh yeah, I do that too. Like, I can kill infantry, but when you force me to punch things, it's way less good. Which is why he's such a compelling choice with Striker 3.
Correct. because I feel like Striker 3 wants to take some stuff that's not as good at killing infantry in his list.
Yep.
And then also because he can make it hit like a ton of bricks.
Well, no, he can make it hit like a standard heavy.
Yeah, like a ton of bricks.
Pound 19?
Yeah. Yeah. 19 is what I would call standard. Mm.
But Thunderhead, like, has all these abilities that you never thought were as good as they were until you're like, oh, if he hits as hard as a standard heavy, like, Warp Wolves stand no chance because now he's sustained attacks. Like, you just buy that one boost, or he auto hits on the charge because Striker feeded. I mean, Warp Wolves are never going to live through that turn anyway. But those slightly, like, those defense 6, or those defense 12, or defense 13 heavies, like a Tenacity Angel or something, Thunderhead is incredibly dangerous too, whereas a lot of other things are not. Like, the standard heavy doesn't do what a Fury Thunderhead does.
Yeah, sustained attack is amazing.
Sustained attack is a different beast.
That was always one of the selling points for the Driller. It was one of the reasons that I loved taking it. Mm-hmm. It's because you get that first hit with that sweet old POW 17 drill.
Let's be honest.
But yes, it was a POW 21
drill. It was a strength of granite drill.
It was a POW 21 drill with all boosted attack.
Yeah.
or all boosted damage.
All boosted damage, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I meant. It's we're definitely in a different landscape for talking about armor solutions with Signar than we used to be. So it's tough to say. There is no exact answer for this question.
Is it crazy to you guys that I actually don't like Stormwall as an armor solution?
No, I kind of agree.
Explain why you don't like it as an armor solution.
There's a lot of games that I'll be thinking about my game plan when the Stormwall's on the table, and I'll be like, I think I can just send Judy forward and let him charge me. And just tank it and then kill it.
Yeah, sure. It depends on whether or not you're playing against Haley, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, of course it does. Yeah. But a lot of times I find Stormwall's output to not be...
Well, it's actually a colossal problem. Like, when all the Colossals came out, as a Kaldor player, the first thing I thought was, like, my eyes got, you know, dinner plate size. Cause it was just like, that's the Behemoth. That's exactly in every way the Behemoth. But he's a weapon platform or whatever version of the rules he's got where he can... And you'd be amazed at how reliant they are on that. So it's like, if he's making melee attacks, you are. It's like, it's something you funnel 3 focus through, and it kind of sucks, actually.
Yeah, when you force a Colossal into melee attacks, specifically the Colossals, they all just, they turn into heavies.
Yeah.
It's just a heavy.
I have a disagreement based on the Earthbreaker, but that's my only disagreement.
Well, I mean, the thing is, like, the Menoth heavy is 22, often power 23 or 24. The Kador heavy is often power 24. The Signar heavy is often power 20.
Wait, how does the Kador
Colossal?
Heavy?
We're talking Colossal.
Yeah, how does the Kador Colossal become 24? What am I missing?
There's a lot of, like, Ragman.
Oh, you're talking about... Oh, yeah, okay, okay. Any old... Okay, okay, yeah. I was trying to...
I mean, Signar can do that, too.
Again.
But usually if they have their Stormwall, they don't have the points for all of the damage fixers.
I mean, usually when you're talking about one-rounding Colossal versus Colossal, most of the Colossals struggle to do it without assistance, right?
No, that's what I mean. Yeah, but Stormwall usually doesn't have... I've noticed that a lot of Stormwall lists don't have a lot of armor fixers because Stormwall is their armor fixer.
No, so how about this then? Stormwall is a fairly to very effective answer for standard heavy armor, like large base heavy armor pieces. Mm-hmm. As an anti-colossal, he's in the same boat that Signar has always been against the prevailing biggest armor thing. It has to get chipped first.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Which he can do, because he's got the POW 15 defender cannons. But the only issue is, a lot of the times, people will go out of their way to accelerate the threat ranges of their large bases. And while Thunderhead does have the arguably the longest, if it's with Haley 2...
Stormwall?
You mean? Stormwall.
Yeah, okay.
His defender cannons sometimes put him in danger. Like,
sure.
Especially from more forward elements. Like, if you're going to try to chip their colossal, like the IFP in front of them might come get you. Mm-hmm. And his covering fire can often keep him safe from that. Like, he's by many considered to be the superlative colossal.
He's definitely in the discussion.
I think he's probably number one because of the existence of Haley. I think he's number one.
So he's not like Signar is to most armor. He is not a point and click solution. Mm-hmm. He is a tactical piece.
He's also a little bit squishy.
Yeah, I think I've said this before, not in this cast, but the Stormwall is. And I agree with Josh. I think he is the best one, just because he does everything.
Yep.
And board control. But he's also the only reason why I take a Conquest. Like, I think the Conquest is one of the worst ones. Unless he's opposite a Stormwall, and then he's the best one. Like, it's a really bizarre, it's a clever balancing act they've kind of done with them. Because it's like, a lot of them are really disappointing. Unless you're going up against a Stormwall, and then they're pretty freaking sweet.
Now, can you explain that or elaborate on that thought?
Well, because I have better mechanics than Signar, so I win the shooting fight. Even though he's got better guns and a better loadout. And then...
That, and you have points for mechanics?
Yeah, I have points for mechanics.
When was the last time you saw... I mean, you see Arlen, I guess.
But I punched... you'd be amazed if they got into a sword fight in the middle. Mine will win. He can't one round me, but I one round him.
They're in a sword fight.
And that's with Arcane Shield, because guess who's easy to get Arcane Shield removed? Us, you know, a Colossal. It's like the easiest, you know.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he gets to kind of pretend he has it, but he doesn't get to have it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the Conquest will one round him, especially with, like, all the casters I would play, which would be Epic Sorsha, P Vlad, so on.
Yeah.
So, anyways,
yeah. Epic Sorsha's Conquest is the one that I'm, by far obviously the most scared of.
Yeah, and it's only good because other colossals exist.
Actually, hers is kind of scary because sometimes it just shoots your heavy off the table. Yeah. You're just like, ugh!
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and that's a shootout that a Stormwall doesn't want to be in. You know.
Yeah.
But the Stormwall is amazing. It's
also,
the best piece.
The Conquest, I think, doesn't get enough credit because did you know that its cannon has devastation? It's not crit devastation. It's just devastation.
No, it is crit devastation. That was actually amazing because Josh had solid ground up.
Hey, Josh is lying.
And Josh just like groups up all of his guys in a smorgasbord for Nigel. He's just like,
what was I shooting, like boom howlers? I was just like,
you shot Midwinter in a cloud because he had null magic up so that she couldn't freezing grip my Kiazi.
Yeah.
And you're like, you need the 10, so you hit. But I mean, it wasn't just that one. Yeah. It was the fact that Nigel and I had played two games now.
Yeah.
And he's taken probably
at least six,
five to six shots with that main cannon. And it has always crit.
It is not crit.
It was six out of six devastations.
Yeah. Oh.
His cannon has literal devastation.
That's a lot better. I need to borrow your dice. I don't know how you got those, but that's really cool.
We went into that, and it was just like, oh, boo, solid ground. Oh, wait. Everybody's just getting tossed around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, solid ground is, like, really cute unless it doesn't matter. And then you're just like,
ah. Yep.
Josh was
I
loving.
Just want to see this number because it's going to be hilarious. Equals. That is about a. Oh my god! This number is actually. It's very small. Very very small. It's like half of a 0.001% to get 10 crits in a row when you're looking for like 30% crits.
Not 10 crits.
Oh no! Sorry,
six
I need to,
crits. Six crits.
Six. Oh six. Sorry, yes. Only six. Let me do
only six.
Three dice, right?
It was just like, on like the fifth or sixth time, I was just like,
So it's only, actually, it's not quite that bad. It's only 0.007 of a percent.
Yeah.
So that can happen.
I know it can happen. It has happened to me.
You should go buy a lottery ticket.
The other strange anomaly.
Also, you should not sleep with somebody you don't know.
I think everyone was a 1-inch devastate. I mean, if I'm not mistaken, I think they're all literally.
Yeah,
one-inch.
It was. He would always crit, and then he would always roll one for the throw.
Every single time. So it's a poopy devastation cannon.
It is a poopy.
I think you may have rolled more than one on the forge guard that were in front of that wall, so that they couldn't go past.
I did.
I mean, it still means all those solid grounded models just die now.
No,
yep,
it's true.
Well, they take.
They take because they take throw damage
They take pow aids
instead of blast.
Unless they get thrown into your colossal or something,
right?
Which
well,
is what
I had like the audacity. I was like complaining, like it only went 1 inch. And I killed like Orin Midwinter
and Gorman DeWolf. Yeah, I just like I killed like a Kiazi and forced tough checks on two more. And I was just like Nigel, I'm gonna murder you.
Just one God, why?
I was trying to throw him back 6 inches. So
it's particularly funny because Joshua is. Does that tough no knockdown thing where he's trying to get under your skid? You totally just freaking crawled up underneath it. And just you're just like I'm a ticket. I'm at home. And that's awesome.
So next up on our, unless we want to talk any more about Signar's armor solutions,
I think we're good.
I mean, it's sort of all over the place. A lot of the merc options are good. You can take hammer dwarves. You can take the steelhead halberdiers with the cavalry.
The cavalry, which are not bad.
Striker and striker open up different options, but a lot of it I think is that. Like, just get them started, and then
sandpapering.
Definitely
surprising
don't
surprising things will get it done.
You mentioned it, but definitely don't underestimate the hunters. I know when you were playing that.
Love the hunters.
That, I mean,
the
600 list.
The 600 list. Like, you're just like, you're like, my colossal, no!
Yeah, Kane's theme force is deceptively good, and that's not quite chip to get you there. It's actually just a Death Star of
hunters.
600 shots.
So that's a potential answer is a Death Star of hunters.
I want to play that.
Every caster can run a Death Star of hunters, but
yeah, but it's there.
Exists. The option exists.
You only need 6 focus to run a Death Star of hunters.
Well, no, because the gun Jack mage Marshall. Runs 2 of them for you.
Yeah, each gun. Well, yeah,
actually a junior can run 2 more pretty easily.
Yeah, yeah. And now Jake's is going to be able to run.
Everybody can run
the like me. I think we're going to the 800 list.
I feel
800.
Now,
75 points.
I honestly, I feel like at this point now we have to offer the disclaimer that results may vary.
Yeah. one thing that's nice about the like chip away at them plan is. It relies on dice, but it relies on dice averages over an aggregate amount of attacks. Like, it's not too bad. It's hard to get straight dice screwed when you're just chipping them down.
Yeah, right. And one other point, it actually ties back to the Kaer Sloan or some of the other things. I like that also because it puts your opponent on this sort of clock, and then they invariably like throw something at you. Like, you'll take an arm off their storm wall and their, or whatever their big tough guy is, or even an avatar. And then
caveat two is it also works much better against War Machine than Hordes because against War Machine you can knock systems out, and 9 times out of 10 they're not playing repairs. So you're like, I got your Cortex. Like, don't have to worry about that one anymore. Moving on.
But yeah, if you can play patient and just sort of play that game and maybe even have to give up a scenario point or whatever to kind of keep at bay, as the damage starts to track up, your opponent will freak out. Like, they'll go on tilt faster than, you know, you'll actually get a payoff and just assassinate them or something at the end, you know, in turn 4 or 5, if you can just keep the turns coming and sandpapering stuff down. But
it's tough. Yeah. It's not easy to do. It's not, and sometimes it's not fun. So,
yeah.
Like,
but that's like, I think that's Kaer Sloan's particularly. That's like her awesome strength is, she just punishes the crap out of you eventually.
That was the eventual solution to armor that I came to when I was playing Signar, and it's not. Yeah, it's not the most enticing. Like, it's not
as satisfying as just crunching something, you know, like putting Tiberian into something and going, I just smashed your face.
It feels so good.
But it's definitely effective.
So, let's jump into the dojo then.
You don't want to do this Protector and Lilith 2 question?
We can come back. Right. I just feel like now's a good time to jump into the dojo. Which we had planned on doing today.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we did. Mm-hmm. It's been a while since we've been in the dojo, right?
Yeah, it has.
Where's
indeed,
the dojo chicken?
Buck, buck, buck.
I feel like the dojo chicken has lost some efficacy.
I don't know. Every time I hear the dojo chicken, I think of the Pagani chicken that we've invented at our local store up in Ames. All right. I'm going to go ahead and start this off, I guess.
Go for it.
I have some Striker Dojo.
Flavor of Striker? Striker
Thunder Horse.
Thunder Horse Dojo?
Thunder Horse Dojo. So first we have the Thunder Horse himself. We have Silas Centurion Thunderhead, Journeyman Warcaster, Runewood, Strange Waves, Ragman, Gorman, Storm Lances, and Silverline Stormguard.
So why do we call this Thunder Horse?
Because he's riding a Thunder Horse.
Because he's Maverick the Thunder Horse.
He's not Maverick. Well, only one person can be Maverick.
How are we keeping the Storm Lances, the Lances alive in this list? Are they?
It's kind of just Silverline.
Okay.
Silverline play as a front line, and then because...
You can Arcane Shield them to protect them from
shooting. We're not Arcane Shielding the Silverline, and I have problems with that.
Yeah.
Arcane Shield is stretched very thin in that list.
Striker 3 does not have Arcane Shield.
No.
Okay.
No. Striker 3 does not have anything defensive.
Nope.
Striker 1 has Arcane Shield.
Correct.
Yep. Yeah, Striker 1 has all the defensive.
Yeah, okay.
He slowly got more offensive as his...
He's just like, I'm getting angry.
I think he's most defensive in his Striker 2.
So, I've actually...
I agree.
Why is that guy 16-16?
Why does he kill literally anything he wants?
I don't know.
And then get to run away.
I don't know. I don't know, Josh.
These are all good questions.
I hate him.
Me too. We hates him.
We hates him bad.
All right. So I've actually posted this list up in our forums in our dojo section in my thread called Colin's Podcast Dojo. And I've gotten some really good feedback on it. And basically... And I tend to agree, it kind of needs the Stormguard solo, or Stormblade solo.
Yeah, so you can
solo.
Charge the lances through the silver line.
Oh, he gives them tactician.
Ragman's probably a good guy to take out, because I can't see Ragman keeping up.
Yep. So there's definitely issues with the list. I
kind of like Ragman with cavalry, actually.
I do, but Striker's got a fury, so it's a luxury.
That's true. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying, I've used him with Steelhead Cav before, and it's worked fine. Because he'll range up, ahead of them in, a cluster of guys so he can sack pawn off on,
and that's also sort of, a weird... Yeah, there's, a Rube Goldberg happening there where they're, hanging out near Steelheads who are... You know what I mean?
Right.
There's a lot of things for him to... Yeah, I don't know.
So...
I don't know. Is this list pretty fast? I mean, this guy's kind of, balls to the wall.
It's not super fast. It's okay. The limiting factor is the speed 5 Stormguard.
Okay.
Speed 5, no advanced deploy. So,
I've learned through my terrible experiences with Stormlances now that they really have to have protection up front. And I originally built this list as it's going to be a third list, and so Boomhauer probably couldn't be in the list.
Yeah. No, I don't think Boomhauer is really a viable. I mean, it'd be okay. Murdoch Boomhauers would be acceptable with him, but they're not on the same level as they are as Haley 2's Boomhowlers.
Just in a random feat turn to I don't know. They seem like they would do a lot of work because of the feat turn with the Murdoch on them, so...
I think what they might do is incentivize you to feat too early.
That could be. I could see that.
That would be my concern with playing Boomhauer. And I mean, Signar, and you really don't want to have to use Boomhauer. Badly. As a Signar player, I badly want a caster where I don't immediately be like, man, if I just have Boom, if I can just put Boomhauer in here, I feel like everything else will fall into place.
Yeah.
So,
go ahead.
The problem I've been running into with his list is that he needs something to shield the Stormlances. And I really want to give the Stormlances a shot. I want to buy these models.
Yeah.
I mean,
I think they're fine.
Yeah.
I think Arcane Shielded Stormlances are actually... Arcane Shield is all you really need on them. So
it's not quite all you need.
You also have 5 boxes.
You also need other stuff in the list that's threatening so they don't become target number 1.
Yeah.
So if you Vanguard with them and you put them out front and they're Arcane Shielded, then you're going to take the brunt of their army on their face. But if they're on a flank coming in hard and fast and you're sort of denying your opponent the opportunity to concentrate force on them, Arcane Shield on them is fine.
Yeah,
but I don't think they're a good Vanguard unit or a good tar pit unit. I think they're a good flanking force.
I mean, they're too expensive to be a tar pit with too few models and too few boxes.
Right.
What is their defensive stats against?
1317.
So 1320. That's pretty resistant to shooting. The problem is when you get a heavy that's just like, here's my heavy shot is to kill like a cav member. And like as soon as you get them down to like
so
two or three,
that's such a high value shot.
Yeah.
Like, it's way more value than I want to give a defender or X boostable gun.
It's good value, but they're probably like only 40% to kill one.
So one thing I've been struggling
because they have to hit and then they have to roll like a 10 or better typically.
Yeah.
One thing I've been struggling with this list is trying to figure out his battle group. Just because his battle group is so... I like the idea of a Centurion. I'd like to also play a Stormclad. I think a Stormclad is actually maybe the best Jack with him. Because he only has a range 8 gun, but, you know, add assault to that. He's arm 19 with his buckler.
Yeah.
So he's pretty sturdy as well. And then you can also arcane shield him, and also needs arm 22 with a good amount of boxes. And
yeah, Stormclad's a good jack. It's fine.
Yeah, and he also hits like a truck, especially if you fury him, or even just iron aggression.
Yeah, when I theory Signar lists, I often find that it's either Centurion or Stormclad. It's usually not both, because of other limits that you need.
Is Junior FA1?
Yes. Yeah. Oh God, yes.
I assumed he was, but...
How many? You would see way more of him.
I would assume so.
Yeah.
Except in one Siege theme force.
Yep.
Yeah, okay. Oh, yeah, the Siege theme force that allows, like, unlimited juniors.
Yeah.
Yeah. And does it also allow Jakes?
If it says Journeyman Warcasters, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah.
I did not know.
So, I mean, one of my things I'd like to figure out is his battle group. And the Centurion seems a little slow. Because there's no way to speed him up.
Like, you have Escort.
Yeah, the Escort speeds him up.
Oh yeah, plus 2 movement.
So he runs 10.
Yeah.
Charges.
I mean, I actually 11. Think...
Speed 4 reach jacks are fine with Escort.
I think...
Speaking from experience. Yeah.
A lot of the Signar jacks that are, like, overlooked quite a bit get really interesting with him because of the combination of Escort and...
Fury.
Mm-hmm. And also even the auto-hitting.
I think with... Yeah.
Like, even the Hammersmith, like, we talked about it. Like, I know Keith hates it, but...
It's only 8 points.
Loathsome piece of crap.
But it's...
But kind of interesting.
It's pretty interesting with Striker. Like.
The reason I think I will still ultimately not play the Hammersmith with him is because every
you
time
don't own one.
Every time I think about it with him, I'm like, oh man. In this, like, when I have like the power 20, because I think it's base 17, maybe 16. It's base crap.
I thought it was
base 16 with the Hammersmith.
Oh, it is 16. Yeah. So it goes to 19.
So I'm like, oh man, the power 19 all boosted attacks. Hammersmith is really good. And I'm like, oh yeah, I can have both of those spells on at the same
right.
time.
Right.
Yep. So like, screw this guy. Get him out of here.
Yeah.
But he auto hits on the charge attack.
On the charge attack, sure. So I only have to use 2 of my fury, or 2 of my focus. No, all 3, because I have to pay for the charge. So I only have to use all 3 of my focus to get my chain attack and then do nothing.
Hooray! You're beating back. You're beating back, baby.
So one thing I actually kind of underestimated with Striker is his chain blast.
Yeah, right away. That's why I was like, Wishnailer goes on this guy.
That was the first time that Keith and I, well, the only time I played against Striker 3 was Keith in my game. And, like, he just came out of the gates chain blasting, and I didn't expect it. I was just like, man. This sucks. Getting chain blast sucks.
chain blasts. Yeah. Every turn, like a chain blast every turn is a lot of value.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Wishnailer makes it so much more because it's only POW 6 on the blast damage.
Yeah.
But
Signs of Portent 6 is Brigade.
It's mm-hmm. POW 8, mm-hmm. which is now you're in Redeemer territory, and we all know how much we all love those. So, yeah.
Yeah. So, is there a significant negative to him not having the plus 2 inches of control?
Just Escort.
Is it just
and
escort?
The feet.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah.
And I kind of like having the longer range for his buff spells.
Sure.
Now, I think there's an argument to be made, but I think Silas is pretty clearly
a better choice.
The better choice for him, which is also fine. Like, Silas isn't... He has a hard time finding work in Signar as it is, so it's not like...
Squire's pretty good.
Yeah.
It's really good.
It's not going to be hard to give him Silas, like, unless you're like, I really, really, really want to play... Striker 3 and Kara Sloan. And Kara Sloan's like, I can give him up. Like, still not the worst thing in the world.
So my first couple games with Siege, we talked about it on episode 160. It was just miserable.
With Striker 3, you mean, not Siege?
Yes, Striker 3. It was just kind of miserable because I didn't have access to Pathfinder. And so, like, basically, since this is going to be virtually all Signar in this list, with the Stormlances and whatever Stormguard I decided to throw in the list.
Yeah, you take Runewood or the Captain, you'll be fine.
Does the Captain... Oh, he gives him Relentless Charge. Yeah. Yeah. So, actually, yeah, I think Runewood comes out then.
And the Captain is boss.
I mean, Runewood's pretty sweet, too.
Such a boss.
He is pretty sweet.
Yeah, the Captain and Runewood were like... In my game against Josh, I was like, I need to kill this heavy. Captain and Runewood's heavy.
So bitter.
Arm 22 just isn't what it used to be.
It was like a defender with two focus, Runewood and the Captain, and Striker's feet. And it was like, yeah, here.
Yep.
So there's that, you know, that layering that Signar does. Good example.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Interesting.
I mean, I think that's one of the really interesting things about Striker 3 as well for Signar is he wants the characters no one else wants. You know, he wants, yeah, the Runewood. And he doesn't really want Mercs. Like, he may want Catherine Lattermore, maybe.
Yeah, Katie.
Yeah.
What's interesting is, in the way that he polishes models, is he's really good at taking an imbalanced list and making it balanced. So a lot of...
Imbalanced how?
Oh, sure, yeah.
A lot of Signar lists are imbalanced in that they struggle with armor, and they're really good at killing infantry.
Yeah.
So if you just take a standard Signar list and you just swap Striker in...
That's why I kind of gravitated towards, like, Rangers and Gun Mages with him right away.
Yeah.
I'm not sold on that lineup, but it's interesting.
Let me tell you, when Rangers or Gun Mages charge your Nis and kill them because they auto-hit with their melee attacks...
Yeah, I thought the Rangers with him was, like, an unexpected, like, oh, that's really freaking good.
Yeah.
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 What's their base pow? 7? Right?
6 or 7.
It's enough to kill ARM 11 models.
That's true, I guess.
And they become weapon masters, right? So they're...
On the feet charge,
pretty good.
Yep.
That seems legit.
It's just so embarrassing. It's just like, how'd you die? Well, 4 Rangers charged my caster.
Furied Rangers.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, that makes sense.
Wait, did you say charged? Yeah.
Now, is there another Signar caster who just sort of has dibs on the Nis? Like, they're just like, they've got to be in my list.
No.
Nope.
Nis are kind of mutable.
See, the thing is, like Gun Mages and Nis overlap in what they do a lot of times in a lot of games.
Yeah. No, that's actually great, though, because you have them both. You get people really coming and going, because it's like, you know, Arcane, True Sight, and Hunter as, like, both on the table. It's pretty brutal.
Yes, when you're like, neither stealth nor cover will protect you.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you're talking about taking both Gun Mages and Murdochness.
Yeah, Murdochness. Because this, I mean, they're POW 12 Weapon Masters with 10-inch threat, auto-hitting, assault, whatever. You know,
it's probably pretty good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Assault is always a strange rule for Nis on me. Because
they're double Weapon Masters, right? With Murdoch under the feet?
Yeah, a little bit of the old...
The old 5 dice POW 12s.
Because you're already taking Rangers, so it's like, you know, early game they can assault just to increase their threat range, you know, just to increase their guns.
Yeah,
and then...
I've been, like, shoehorning those Stormlances into every list because I'm just like, please one time, please one time. Mm-hmm. Like, let the crazy Europeans be right about these guys. Like, please one time. And it keeps not happening. So I will probably drift into the Nis Gun Mages, Rangers, and a battle group and see what happens next time around.
Yeah.
Eric just beat Crump.
Oh! Wait, what was Crump playing? Was he playing Mercs?
I don't know, but he beat Crump. That's just what...
Oh, it's my birthday. Crump's not on this podcast, and he just lost to Eric. It's Crump, so great.
See, this is just like... I feel great vindication from this, because Josh is my Padawan, and Eric is his Padawan. And so like, my grand Padawan has just surpassed Crump.
I feel so bad, because Crump's kind of my Padawan.
I mean, your sensei?
I'm so bad.
No, I think he got it right.
Yeah, I think he got it right.
Oh, man.
Oh, well, I beat your Padawan.
That's true.
That's true.
You shame me.
I've still never lost.
Look, you let Chad one-shot you. Stuff happens.
I let him.
Stuff happens.
Stuff happens? I've never lost to Colin.
Yeah, well, if you played more games,
I've played as many games against Colin as you have.
The statement.
I have played as many games against Colin as you have. I'm just saying, I've never lost to Colin.
I'm just saying the statement, like, this has never happened to me in a game before. It doesn't hold up very well when you play 10 games a year.
I play way more than 10 games a year. I go to conventions and play 10 games a convention often.
So, yeah, I mean, that's kind of, like, where I think my brain first went to when I was thinking about Striker 3. And I'd be interested to hear your experiences on it, mostly because I'm curious how the Centurion will play out. But, like, the Silver Line, I don't feel like...
You played Circle.
I just don't feel like the Silver
wow,
Line...
Wow, we're screwed.
Is Eric coming with us to the Mayhem Cup?
Yes, swap him out.
See what he's doing this weekend.
I just don't feel like the Silver Line are going to hold up without more help than they have available to them in that list.
I mean, I feel like Silverline have to have Arcane Shield, otherwise they just get shot off the table.
And the same thing is true of the...
They either have to have Arcane Shield or you have to engineer something else. Like, you were running the Cloud Dwarves to hide several of them behind to keep them from getting shot.
No, I was running Trenchers.
Or no, Trenchers, which I think is legitimate.
I actually think then that's what I was... I don't know if I've talked about Striker 3 on the... About how I think Trenchers...
No, I don't think you have.
Okay. I think Trenchers are good with him. And I think you have to play them in a different way. Like, all I'm hoping the Trenchers do, because they're another unit that can, like, accidentally force you to feed early. But all I want the Trenchers to do is put up smoke for 2 turns and maybe draw some fire. And if they can do that, I think they've earned their points. Just a min pack, just 6 Trenchers. And they just make smoke for the horses, and you don't even use all of them. You use, like, 3 smoke clouds or 4 smoke clouds the first turn, and then however many you have left the second time. And to just try to get Striker and the horses close enough so that you can feat when it's really good. So you can feat when it's really good. And you can keep Arcane Shield for, like, a battle group model that's ranging out. So you don't have to be, like... So that Arcane Shield doesn't have to be everywhere at once. And maybe this is madness, but I think maybe Trenchers are good this time.
I think you might be right. Like, I think...
Because they also have the additional value of if they survive somehow, like, they're brilliant on the feet. Absolutely brilliant. Because they're a little bit... They hit a little harder. They're like pound 9.
Yeah. It was interesting in your guys' game. Josh was doing a pretty good job of, like, whittling 2 to 3 a turn. But he's, like, wasting galleon attacks to do it. You know, or whatever it was. Was it Earthbreaker?
No, it was Galleon would shoot, like, 1 or 2 after I... So, like, I think our game may have... I think I would like to see you play that list more against not Bart Galleon, because I feel like Galleon is, like, the nightmare for Storm Lions, right?
Yeah.
It's like, Bart's Galleon.
Bart's Galleon is about as bad as it gets.
Because he's just like, any of you that are in range, I will get to kill that number of you.
Right, pretty much.
Yeah. So... but yeah, like I think again, something that's not specifically Bart Galleon, that I think that strategy has some real merit, because it was annoying in our game.
I'm interested to see him more. And I'm going to sound like your average Signar player here. I wish the stupid UA let them dig in and smoke.
Oh, it's only make attacks, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah.
Sometimes, though, if you do get lucky, on turn 1, if you get to go first, you can advance and dig in. And then on turn 2, they can blow smoke while they're dug in.
Yeah.
Behind that line, and then, like, all live. And then turn 3, advance and smoke.
Yeah.
And then you move up, and then you're in a real good, and then you're in a real good spot.
You can also, like, cycle Arcane Shield. You can Arcane Shield on the Trenchers for a turn to further insulate them. Just for the first
time. If they're not dug in and you're trying to protect them from blast damage, I mean, yeah, sure. Yeah.
Yep. So anybody else got some dojo?
Yeah, actually. I was looking at Gorshade 3 the other day. I actually played him in a little scramble.
Uh-huh, the new caster dojo.
A 50-point scramble.
I've got an old caster dojo, but we'll get there in a second.
I made a mistake when I was building this list, so I want to talk about possible options for getting me out of the error I made, in which I built a list where there was not one model, not a single model, that I was okay feeding on. Because I had Bane Cav, Bane Thralls, and then like Battle Group, basically at that point.
Ah.
So it's like,
by what exactly does it, oh, his feat is the one
his
where
feat
you...
is blow up your dudes to stationary stuff around them.
Oh yeah.
So I didn't have anything that was
expendable,
that was fast and cheap. You want something that is both fast and cheap, and I did not do that.
Min Blood Witches.
I had some things that were fast, mm-hmm. but they were Bane Cav, and I had some things that were cheap-ish. Like Bane Thralls are not.
I think Min Blood Witches may be right. I mean, we've had that discussion about like Tom's theory that the Blood Hag is worth 6 points as a solo.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're also they're really good because the mini feat allows you to deliver them.
Yeah, no, I'm yeah. Like they could literally do nothing except get to the position where they get delivered, are used for the feat, and the Blood Hag sticks around to remove Tough and whatnot.
I know, Fox. I know. That's my next point.
But I mean, they're speed 7. They get a turn of Incorporeal. They come with a Blood Hag.
I mean,
they're cheap.
That's an interesting idea, and I might go that route.
It's the low hanging fruit.
The one that I think might actually come out on top is the Black Banes, because you can mockery them back. They're pretty good with Scything Touch on them. You can really get crazy and incorporate Rengrave, at which point they're actually accurate.
Mm-hmm.
Mat 8.
Mm-hmm. Are they speed 7?
Wait.
They are speed 7.
Rengrave affects them?
Yeah, any Revenant.
Holy criminy Christ. I thought it was just the Archimedes.
No.
Oh my god.
As long as they can see him.
Wow. I mean, I didn't know that they were sort of the Revenant crew. Okay, that's amazing. I already love Captain Rengrave. He's pretty sweet.
And they're incorporeal all the time. So you get the ability, unlike the Blood Witches, they have the ability to run through things.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't bring Ghostwalk to the table.
Yeah, no, that's a good point.
So, but they're not cheap.
Right.
They're
I felt like we talked about Black Banes as an option.
And I'm pretty sure I'm like 75% that I want Black Banes because they also can make more of themselves.
Right. Yeah.
And then so it doesn't feel quite so bad.
Plus, the nice thing is that at 1 point per model, and you're spending 2 focus per one to bring back. It's actually, you're getting sort of a value buy. I mean, obviously, Cav or whatever, there's, like, better price point models. But it's actually nice to, like, be doing it, you know.
And I can see, like, stealth Black Banes being really friggin' aggravating for things that are not gun mages.
Yeah, I don't think Gorshade... I don't feel like Gorshade 3 is your Signar drop anyway.
No.
I'm not sure...
absolutely not.
Well, yeah. But, I mean, anybody who can just have stationary on demand is always in the game. You know, it's always...
I mean,
think about that statement, though. Mockery is actually really good against Signar.
Yeah, yeah. His assassination may just be like it might be the best in Krix. Well, no, Mort Nebra's is better.
Tom Gwan may disagree.
Mort Nebra's is better, but Tom Gwan loves this guy, which is an indication that his assassination is really good.
So, the two problems with my list, as I saw it, were that like it took. Beautiful, perfect advantage of mockery. Like, 3 mockeries a turn. Because it was Deathjack, 1 Arcanode, the Cav, Tartarus, the Bane Thralls. I mean, that was pretty much it. Like, a couple Sirens.
Mm.
Scarlock. I actually felt like I didn't need the Scarlock. Like, I was like, oh man, Scything Touch, so good. Like, cast that all the time. Mm. And I had the Wither Shadow Combine in there.
What about Deathjack? Do you...
Deathjack was in there.
I know, I mean...
He's probably getting cut.
Yeah.
Like, the Infernal Machine, really super good on him.
Yeah.
Siphon Bolt is fine, a fine spell to be casting, but
probably...
And, like, he's really fun when he's occultated, but his occultation is spread too thin. Like, I was trying to build the Stealth Skew. Stealth Skew was my idea. Like, Stealth the Bane Cav. Then I've got Bane Cav, Bane Thralls, Tartarus, 2 Sirens, Wither Shadow Combine, all stealthy.
Right.
Which is like...
Yeah.
Here comes.
Stealth Skew, sweet.
Also, the Deathjack is pretty funny when on the first turn he can run 16 inches plus AD and be somewhere like really incredibly frustrating.
Wait, and, can he run and occultated?
Oh, from Infernal Machine.
Yeah. Okay. But he can't be occultated unless you can somehow, unless you get an Arcanode to him after he runs, which I guess you could, but your Arcanode's then pretty exposed. But it's just like, oh, there's a house on your side of the table, and like Deathjack is now hiding behind that house, like threatening to charge where your models are going to move to,
right.
And you can't see him.
Yeah.
That one, I kind of want to try, like, this would be a good, well, What about taking that like little junior Warcaster guy with the Leviathan and then having just Gorshade run a Leviathan?
Oh, yeah. So I was going to say, in addition to not having models to feed on, the other problem with my list was that I had no functional way to take advantage of a stationary caster. I stationaried your caster. Like, if you weren't in melee threat ranges already, this didn't matter.
Yeah. I mean, you didn't have Arcnode to put Siphon Bolt through, or you just lost your other
one Arcnode. I had the one Arcnode. Okay. So I had the Siphon Bolt was the only part of the assassination. And yeah. I feel like you want to follow up. Like, an Iacos Leviathan is probably pretty strong for him.
Pistol Race, maybe?
Pistol Race, perhaps. Yeah. Perhaps.
You can't Mockery... You can't Mockery solos back, right?
Just No, grunts.
Sad. Yeah.
Sad. I mean, I'm not actually sad.
No. I think I would have actually a huge problem with Mockery on Pistol Race.
Yeah.
Not really.
That's probably not okay. Actually, now that I think about it, never mind. That was a momentary lapse of stupidity.
The only reason Pistol Race are okay is because they're 3 points and gun mages will remove them from the table.
Because every game with Gorshade would be like, this turn I Mockery back my two Sirens. Next turn I Mockery back my two Pistol Rays.
Yeah.
Next turn I Mockery back is just like, two Sirens, two Pistol Rays.
The first time you Mockeried back a Siren, I would flip the table and quit War Machine.
I feel like we missed an opportunity, too.
Oh, man, that'd be amazing. Gorshade is kind of the problem that I'm thinking about right now. And I think, once again, it might be that if I end up removing Storm Lances from Striker, it'll be kind of amusing because I think I'm going to end up removing the Bane Cavalry from Gorshade.
Yeah, I buy that.
They demand occultation. They must have it unless your opponent has nothing at all that wants to shoot at you. In which case,
you win anyway because you're crits.
You probably were good to go already, right? Yeah. So. Or certainly good to go with any other Krixcaster. So, like, he doesn't win the melee fight as hard as some of the other Krixcasters do, but, yeah, like...
So you might say he doesn't Krix harder?
He does not. He does not Krix harder. He Krix differently a little bit.
No, he Manoth Krixes.
So, I probably end up cutting the Bane Cav and having my standard Mockery Pit be just the Bane Thralls. Because I do like some I like... the idea that everything in his army should have built-in defenses. Just because he doesn't provide much other than occultation. So you want one... Like, the Black Banes I like for him because they're built-in incorporeal. I like the idea of Satixus Raiders with him because they've got their built-in defenses. So it might just be like a smorgasbord. You just go smorgasbord with him. I feel like I don't want the Mechanithral engine.
I want to see the Black Banes played. I'm genuinely curious.
Yeah, I'm interested in that. Are you?
Oh, actually, I might want the Mechanithral engine because I sure can Mockery back Stitch Thralls.
Yep. Mm-hmm. That's annoying.
Just Mockery. And I mean, they're like one of the lowest possible point investments.
Wait, can you Mockery back Brute Thralls?
No.
Really?
Oh, boo.
That's okay, really annoying, actually.
It's like, oh, you scalpeled out one of the Stitch Thralls. I'll just Mockery him back and walk him forward and collect five corpses.
Yeah. Actually, aren't potentially Stitch Thralls really good feet targets?
And yes, also potentially.
Okay, actually, targets. Just like... Like, all right, Stitch Thralls with Mechanithral, like the Stitch Thrall, like Mechanithral engine, plus Black Bane's Ghost Raiders, plus Mockering your Banes.
Ugh. Like, just go maximum Krix recursion?
Just maximum recursion makes me want to throw up. And then eventually you're just like,
Josh,
well...
stop talking.
Well, we've attritioned him down.
Do not convince him.
And
please stop convincing him. Do not.
Like, we've attritioned you down, and it's low, but, like, I'm pretty much winning the attrition battle, and I still have, like, these stragglers left because of so much attrition that it can run next to your caster, and now it's, you know, GG.
So, yeah, let's take a look at... Let's build
what
it.
What have you done,
spot.
Josh?
Let's build it.
Why do I do this?
Well, you might say you reach these kids.
Recursion. A recurring nightmare. That's what we'll call it.
Yep.
Really, we're going to use Magic the Gathering? I thought we got crumpled.
I mean, recurring nightmare is a magic card, but it's a magic card because it's a thing that's not magic. Recurring nightmares.
First thing you thought of when you said recurring nightmare?
Was the magic.
Okay, I rest my case.
Me too.
Come on.
So, we put Tartarus in. Let's put Rengrave in. Let's go whole hog and see how far we get.
Right.
Mm-hmm. We want Full unit Bane Thralls. We want Black Bane's Ghost Raiders. Now, the question I have on the Ghost Raiders is mini or maxi pack?
I would start with max. You can always bring it down.
Yeah, you can always bring it down, I suppose. Mechana Thralls. I always start with a min there, but it doesn't sound like we're going to have a lot to...
I kind of like the two min that you were running with Denny.
Yeah,
the
I like
day.
The double min. Double min's cute. It's actually, oh my god, we're only at 33 points. Oh, and I have to put attachments on.
Also, battle group.
And a battle group, yeah.
I mean, it can just be Arcanids, right?
It's probably going to just be Arcanids.
Yeah.
Like, just two Arcanids, so that he has backup for Siphon Bolt later in the game.
Are we attached to the Bane Thralls?
Think,
is that some attachment I was missing?
You yeah.
I guess he is just an assassination on in and
do we have a junior warcaster running around with the Leviathan?
Like,
not yet.
Just his stack of focus, Siphon Bolt, stationary. You like, that's...
The Leviathan's such an amazing, like, built-in can of whip-ass. So it's like, eh.
How many points is the junior?
C3? Four. They're all four.
They're all four? Okay.
So that would be 48. I'd be a little short. I'd have to sneak something around.
Don't you like Iron Lich Overseer with the Leviathan more than Iacos, you were saying? Or is that something specific?
For specifically stealth spam. So, I mean, that is built-in defense.
Yeah.
But I'm less certain that I would be able to... run the ILO to get souls with Gorshade than I would be with Denegra.
What? Why do you say that?
Just because unless it's my feet turn, like, I'm not guaranteed, because he has to run up to them, probably. And it has to get within 2 inches, and then I have to be able to kill those models.
What does Denny do that's...
Crippling. I mean, pick. Like, well, Denny can kill whatever.
Right, no, I mean, I get that. I'm just saying, like, he's always going to have to get, like, close to the... To the lines, right?
Yeah, it's just a question of, especially with this list, because there is...
How much they can retaliate afterwards, is that the...
Yeah, afterwards retaliation combined with just the ability to kill the things that he runs up to.
Okay.
On demand.
Okay, I gotcha.
And maybe I'm wrong about that, but... So, I could still just put a Leviathan in the list. That's something you could do, because on the turn that you feat... but unless he needs to Siphon Bolt... His assassination's kind of goofy. There's also not very many solos in the list yet, so my activations are kind of clumped up.
How far off does a 4-inch template go off of a small base?
Are they 4? I thought they were 3.
I was talking
3 plus is off the base.
Yeah, I'm talking about the feet as well.
Oh.
They're 3.
They're 3? Oh.
About an inch.
Okay.
Off a small base.
About an inch? Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
About an inch.
So he can reliably get 2 models, pretty much.
Yeah. You sacrifice your own. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. You destroy them, not remove them from play.
Oh, that's kind of nice. You still get
so
the,
I can mockery
corpse,
them
yeah.
back, and
yeah.
I get corpses. So...
Yeah, I don't like this recurring nightmare version, actually, because it's just... His feet is way better.
11 points is so close to 12.
Because it has almost no cost.
Yeah, I mean, you're just playing to all the strengths on his card. You're ignoring... Like, Occultation is just... good, so it doesn't really matter what it gets occultated, right? So instead of just trying to spam the one thing, you're just like, what does he do best?
All of these things, and
yep.
now we're doing them.
Yep, exactly.
Yay!
It was kind of like when I was building for Ashlyn, I kept building lists like I would see on the Merc forums. Like, oh, she can't break armor, so I'll take Forge Guard. And eventually I was just like, nope, she likes her models to be a high def. That's what she does. I hit you, you don't hit me. And the list got a lot better after that, so...
I think, because I played with both Withershadow and Scarlock. I think either of them is fine, but you want one of them so that you can have both of your upkeeps running and still get triple mockery. Like, triple mockery, to me, is the key to Gorshade.
Yeah.
Mockering 3 times.
Sure.
Almost every turn you can.
Sure.
Just triple mockery for victory.
So I have a question. Rules interaction-wise. Sorry.
Go ahead.
So Black Banes adds 3 members to the unit. Does the max then go to 13 so you can mockery?
Yes, because they create new members.
Okay.
And so do the necrosurgeons. So they're creating brand new things.
So you never get locked out of mockery then?
So you do not, yes. It's very difficult to get locked out of mockery. Tartarus also creates new members. Rengrave creates new members.
Okay, my challenge to you is, how big can you make Black Bane's unit?
Do they have a cap?
No cap.
Okay, I didn't know if it was like...
Only Alexia brings a cap.
Okay.
I mean, the cap is how many Black Banes you actually own.
Right. That is true. for tournament play. I feel like once the opponent has put all their Black Paint Ghost Raiders on the table.
See, at this point with double Arknode, Tartarus Rengrave, Bane Thralls Black Bane, two mini packs of Mechana Thralls, and two Surgeons, I have 11 points to go.
Wow, so that's a lot and still have 11 points.
So you probably want some number of Warwitch Sirens.
1 point. It's 1 point shy of Stixis Raiders and Stixis Raiders UA Captain.
Darn! A list without Stixis Raiders.
1 point shy.
You know what I kind of want in that list? A Bukur.
To what purpose?
Maybe the new...
Blackbane from getting shot.
Warjack of Renown. That's a shield guard.
Potentially. Probably not great for this list, but...
Did they spoil his points?
I mean, he's got... Infernal Machine. It's not the worst spell for that guy.
No, it's pretty good on that guy, actually.
What is Infernal?
He just follows Rengrave around and Tartarus, potentially, and is like, you shall not die.
No. Blackbane.
What does...
Because the recursion goes away when Blackbane dies.
Oh, yeah.
What does Infernal Machine read?
What do you mean?
Like, what's the spell?
It's a battle group model gets... Warjack in battle group gains plus two mat and speed and terror.
Just any Warjack in the battle group?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Is it like a range?
Six.
Okay.
It's a buff.
Standard buff.
Okay.
Actually, no, Infernal Machine's really good on the Injector or whatever it's called. Inseminator. What is it?
Oh, my God.
We're not going to make those jokes, John, as much as you want us to.
And it's...
Condom King.
That guy is 8 points?
Yeah.
So with a Scarlock and him, I would have three to go. Eight, ten. No, just one.
Can he get a point anywhere to put a Warwitch in?
Currently, no.
You're running two packs of...
Two min packs. I could make it a maxi
pack. I was going to say, what if you make it a max pack?
I don't like it as much.
The min packs give you so much more flexibility.
No, I don't disagree. Mm-hmm.
I'm probably not going to play that new Jack. So let's just put two Sirens in and see where we're at.
That was short-lived.
Yeah.
I still like the idea of at least a Booker.
Yeah, I don't hate it. I mean, Stealthy Rengrave, pretty good, but... Or Stealthy Blackbane.
I mean, it is.
Is he Stealthy and Incorporeal, then?
He is, in fact, Stealthy and Incorporeal. If you occultate him, he's Stealthy and Incorporeal.
Oh, that's annoying as hell.
Come mages don't care.
And you said the Scarlock Thrall was like not that useful?
No, it's
the Wind of Shadows more handy.
It's having both that's the problem. Because then you're like, I'll upkeep this for free and let I can either spend the one to upkeep the second of my two upkeeps, because I usually don't have all three running.
Yeah.
Or just Scarlock it back on again. Mm-hmm. And with especially with Scything Touch, you usually want to Scarlock it somewhere different.
Yeah.
So when you're like, the difference between one and zero camp for him is like, meh. Mm-hmm. Don't really care. Like,
well, yeah, he's going to be so far in the back.
I kind of
he doesn't have to be super active with his game plan. He can be really safe.
Not until he goes for the feed, at least.
Yeah. But that's a turn you don't have to Mockery. You just can't.
Right.
Well, what?
Or Siphon Bolt and win.
Right.
I mean.
Yeah.
So in this recursion type list, what actually benefits from the feat of making a caster stationary?
The feat doesn't make a caster stationary. It's make whatever I want stationary.
Okay. He's saying before you were talking about
not having things to
follow up. Rengrave has a hand cannon.
Yep.
Blackbane has a hand cannon.
No.
He doesn't.
No.
Siphon Bolt.
Yeah. At this point, it's Rengrave and Siphon Bolt. Okay. And Warwitch Siren's Braze, I guess.
So, yeah.
So, figuring out...
And the other one that... the new one, actually, is built Mechana Thralls. Build them charge.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Mechana Thralls have a surprising threat range that way.
Yeah, that's true.
And they're pretty good against stationary targets, I hear.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially the old Scything Touched Mechana Thralls, pretty good against stationary targets. Yeah, I would agree with that.
Do you auto-hit at something in melee... With
that's stationary.
Stationary.
Yeah. Yes, indeed.
You sure do.
You sure do.
It's pretty good. Pretty good.
Mm-hmm. So I think Scarlock over Withershadow, although, both isn't the worst thing ever. Although, at this point, what I kind of want is some more bodies. I have 5 points to go, and I want bodies. 6 points for that min pack of Blood Witches.
Tempting.
Oh, yeah.
Indeed.
You get that 6-point solo and the witches for free.
Yep.
God, Tom Guan, I love you. This has just been the Tom Guan show because he just says, like, the most ridiculous stuff, and it's so awesome.
I actually can't believe he said that. That you could take the Bloodwood. Like, if the Bloodwood.
Have you watched him play?
Yes.
The way he does it, that's fine. It doesn't work the way that I play.
Yeah, I know.
Bugger all. I guess we could drop Rengrave, but I don't love that. I like Rengrave.
Come on, you have to admit, there's like some cool kid factor when you put Rengrave on the table. That people are like, what does that guy do?
He's legit.
And you get to, like, kind of explain it.
It's also, like, he looks badass.
Yeah. He has a Rat 6 ghost-shotting man cannon.
I was going to say, he's got a man cannon.
Yep.
I don't know why we're calling him man cannons.
Because we all have AIDS.
AIDS.
Honest to God, Nigel's been here for like a week and a half, and now none of us can speak English anymore. It's terrible.
I could drop.
Everything is goober. Whenever we want a dad, it's called goober now.
Yep.
I don't say that one. I can drop a siren.
Okay, so maybe we want you to work out the final points later, and you can put it up on the forums.
I won't do that, but I'll talk about it again if I.
Or you can just send that list to me, and then I'll put it up on the forums.
Yeah, I probably won't do that either.
Because I feel like we're grinding to a halt here.
Okay. Yeah, so anybody else have some dojo?
I have a dojo list. It's a list you and I talked about, Keith.
Yeah.
This is an old caster. This is an escalation caster.
Mm-hmm.
I've been thinking about. Because of Mayhem Cup coming up.
Wait, there were minion casters in Escalation? I don't remember that.
Yeah, no, this is a Protector caster.
Oh!
Yeah, I was thinking about specifically the Morvana 2 matchup because she's actually really hard on Protectorate in general. We don't really have any silver bullets for her.
Mm-hmm.
We have playable matchups. Like, I played Kraos against Colin, and I played pretty well. I didn't play perfectly, but I played pretty well, and he still won.
I'm kind of sad Crump's not here, so I can't be like, Crump, did you know that Colin is bobbling us on the forums?
So I just started thinking about different casters, and I'm like, well, as I often do, I grab my book, and I just start looking at casters, like, is this caster good in the Morvana matchup? Let's think about it. What's on the spell list? What can I do? And I sort of settled on Fiora 1, which is probably not somebody that jumps out at you, but number one, she doesn't have an upkeep-based game plan.
That's important.
She definitely has upkeeps. I mean, she has... well, she has one. She has Ignite, which is a very good upkeep.
She has two. Flame Wall.
She has Flame Wall. Hex Hammer?
Yes.
She has Hex. I don't even know what that does.
Yeah, I've never heard of
that. If you cast a spell in her controller range, you take D3 damage. So it's very corner case, but sometimes it's hilarious.
Yeah, it's cute.
No, my Battle Mages.
Yeah, the problem is the Battle Mages still get to make their Zot, so she still
my
dies.
Battle Mages. Oh, Fiora's dead. Oh, it's like, oh, my Battle Mages get themselves out of the way.
So, before I talk about why I settled on Fiora, because I actually am trying to solve two problems.
Mm-hmm.
The first was Morvana 2. The second with Will's proliferation with Retribution.
Sure.
I wanted to be able to play a caster that I could...
That didn't die to Mage Hunter Strike Force.
That I could drop against Ret and I feel good about.
Yeah.
Which is also hard to find in Protectorate, by the way.
I agree. So when you're talking about Morvana, specifically explain, is there... Because you're like, is there something different about Morvana in relation to Protectorate that you feel... Like, why do you think Protectorate has a hard time with Morvana?
A lot of our casters are very easy for her to assassinate.
Okay, so you're mostly concerned about the assassination vector? Do you feel like...
That's the first problem you have to solve.
That's... like, maybe I don't understand that because I keep getting bar killed.
So. Yeah. No, you're alive is step one.
Yeah. When you're thinking about the Morvana problem, the first thing you have to be like is, I can't die to Double Thunder Spirit. I can't die to Werewolves. Right?
Yeah, I feel like that's getting played a lot less these days, but yes, you're right. You're right.
I mean, you just I can't die to Slender Spirits. I can't die to Slender Spirits plus World Warden shot or World Wrath shot.
Yeah.
So I mean, these are things you just have to think about. You're just like, well, I can't die. The other thing is it's even more complicated because I can't die to Blood Pack feeded in my back arc shooting me with Pow 13s in the butt. You know.
Sure.
So. There's a lot of vectors she has to kill you, and some of them are extremely difficult to stop. And the only way you can really do it is just man up and camp through it.
Sure.
A lot of my Menoth casters can't really do that.
So does Fiora 1 do that better than Fiora 2?
No. Well, She does it exactly the same.
It's exactly the same?
Because
15, 17.
They have the same
but
step.
But Nora 2 has escort.
She doesn't have escort.
There's this thing called purification. So
that's true.
It doesn't really matter.
You're right.
So they have exactly, again.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so the biggest difference between the two is Fiora 2 has an upkeep-based strategy. Like, escort is extremely important.
Sure.
And having to cast at every turn greatly reduces her effectiveness in the focus
sure.
she can
sure.
have on everything
okay.
else. Anyway,
that makes sense.
That's not really that important. But the other thing that Fiora 1 brings to the table is a really interesting feat in that her feat lights everything in her control range on fire,
mm-hmm.
which I can use it in one of two ways. At least this is the way I'm anticipating using it. We haven't tested this yet, but we're going to. Maybe tonight. I can either feat early and force Morvana to feat to get back in the game.
I find that usually... Well, I mean, I don't have a feat like Fiora's, but it feels like you usually lose if you feat before she feats, if your feat is used to remove models from the table.
I'm not sure in this case, because... Yeah. I'm gonna force the models to be removed,
uh-huh.
and then when she feeds them back, I'm gonna get a turn of. They don't get to make attacks.
Right, you're right.
So when they come back, and that's kind of a big deal.
No, I agree.
But anyway, the reason why I settled on Fiora 1 was I can camp her to armor 24. I can put a Devout in the list and basically just say, okay, Morvana, you really can't kill me unless you can get a stalker on me, and I'm probably going to prevent that.
Sure.
Like, I'm not going to just let her put a stalker on me. That's pretty much... And even then, the stalker doesn't auto-kill me. So, mm-hmm. The other thing that's really nice, if Morvana ever gets cheeky, like, if I get her in the feet, she gets lit on fire, which greatly also reduces the feet.
Sure.
And Fiora can just kill her dead. She has Engine of Destruction. So,
if you get to her. Yeah, yeah. Sure. I don't know if I've ever seen a Morvana remotely close to charge range of another caster.
Well, yeah, that's true. But usually Morvana is forcing your caster to hang in the back, where Fiora is going to be able to play midfield.
That's fair.
Because I've specifically designed her list to fully camp every turn.
Okay.
And not spend focus unless it's... I mean, I can. It's a luxury, but it's not a necessity in the way mm-hmm. the list is designed.
Mm-hmm.
And the purpose is that for that is to push Morvana out, because with Engine of Destruction, like, Fiora is very dangerous.
Yeah.
I mean, she becomes Mat 10 or 11? Mat, I think she becomes Mat 10,
plus
power
four.
Power 17 with two attacks, two initials. So, like, stuff's going to get done.
Yeah, for sure.
So we'll go on to the list. She only has a single model in her battle group. That's a Devout, mainly because if you're also playing against Retribution, you have to be able to take Eris's shot.
Mm-hmm.
She's sort of naturally immune to strike force that isn't augmented in some way.
Sure.
And then her feat is actually really good against strike force.
Yeah.
Because you're just like, kill two-thirds of your guys before they really get to do much.
Was she a 7 or a 6?
She's six. A 6.
Okay.
Yep. She's a 6. So I have the Devout. I have Avatar of Menoth, Covenant of Menoth, Vassal of Menoth, Eris... 2, Rax, Bastion Seneschal, Rupert, which might be better as Saxon Orc, not sure. Choir of Menoth, Zealots plus Monolith Bearer, and 2 full units of Bastions.
You do love them Bastions.
I especially like Bastions with the Avatar. They played really well together. And I think the Seneschal just actually kind of puts them back on the table. But when you can protect and liven with medium-based models that you can't trivially remove that have reach, so you can kind of set up just no-fly zones for troopers to get around to pin him in, he becomes a huge problem child. And, like, he'll run the table in a lot of games by himself.
Don't really like the idea of you playing Fiora, honestly, because I don't like the idea of playing against the Fire Feet.
I'm
really grateful that I don't see Fiora 1 as a man that plays a lot of arm 11 troops.
Yeah, her feet's kind of a kick in the nuts.
Yeah, no, I agree.
And the trick is keeping her alive when she feats. But like I said, I've designed her to be, you know, she's going to be 23 or 24 armor, def 15, with probably unkillable zealots in front of her and some combination of Avatar's gaze and Bastions all over. Like,
Like you said, I like your You're battened up against purification. You're battened up against the assassination. It is actually interesting. Like, if you can remove enough of her army early, then you can force her to feat in a way that doesn't, like, win her the attrition game just as an avalanche.
Nope.
And that feat definitely has the potential for being able to do that. I like it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. We're going to test it out. It's just, it's all theory right now. Like, maybe the Bastions are the wrong call. But what I kind of thought is, Fiora is really good at killing a lot of the infantry. And Bastions, although they don't have a high volume of attacks, they have high value attacks. And the Avatar is the same way, high value attacks. So if she clears out a bunch of stuff with her feet,
yeah,
then they kind of just clean up.
Yeah, for
sure. They're going to clean up the stragglers. And it's a lot. It's going to be a lot for people to chew through.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think of an alternative to the Bastions. Because I agree they may be the wrong call.
I think one unit is always, like, decent. So I don't know if you can do something with the other unit, but...
Yeah, I mean, the other thing I could do is I could put a Templar on the list. But then I might be tempted to spend focus.
I like it for the exact reason John mentions, though, is the...
You have
the
no
bookends for the Avatar. If you have, like, one bookending the one side and the Covenant on the other, he's basically got an escape corridor that's pretty tough to deal with.
Yep. You also, if you put in Jax, probably have to put in Choir, right? You have no Choir right now.
No, there's Choir in the list.
Oh, I didn't think you had Choir. Are you
for the Avatar?
Yeah, also...
Oh, for the Avatar.
Yeah. Also, the Devout with Ignite becomes POW 17, so he's sort of a nice surprise.
Yeah. Like, just... But, I mean, you wouldn't put Choir in the list if the only Jack was the Devout.
I might.
Yeah.
Usually not.
Yeah.
Usually not. I mean, she doesn't. There are potentially mercenary options.
Like Forge
Hammer,
Guard?
Yeah, Forge Guard are always a potential. I don't know that. No, she doesn't really.
Well, I mean, the other thing.
I don't know that's really any better than
this. This list just got full Zealots plus Monolith Bearer. So they have kind of a natural delivery system for the Bastions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the Bastion Seneschal actually takes a lot of the sting out of the shooting. Not all of it, but... Like, he's going to heal 5-10 points a turn.
Hmm.
That adds up, too.
Yeah. First 5 damage is free, basically.
Yep.
You spread out the first 5 and then start doing normal allocation from there.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely don't.
The other thing is, not to toot my horn too much, but I don't really see people play Bastions the way I play Bastions.
Yeah, it can be really super annoying.
Yeah, I mean, I don't hate the Bastions. They feel like they might be slow.
They are slow.
I just mean...
They have a 9-inch threat,
the
though,
list
which is enough.
Like, does the list... I mean, I guess you've got the Zealots, obviously, for contestion. So that might be enough.
It usually is.
Yeah.
Stupid Zealots.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I also have the Avatar, which is a nice hard center.
So I feel
also
like...
Also true.
Actually, a potential issue could be the blood trackers kind of forcing you to pop many feet with Zealots maybe a little earlier than you want to.
Yeah.
Like
I fully intend.
The problem is that if the blood... I mean, the many feet almost always gets popped on turn 2 anyway. So.
Yeah.
Like, if the blood trackers come up to kill the Zealots, then...
They're going
to
get feeded on.
Then they get feeded on by...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, by Fiora, and they're all dead.
Yep, that's really annoying.
Not only 2/3 of them are dead.
Right.
Or they could just
half would die, because some of them will tough out.
They can't tough.
Yeah, they won't have tough.
They won't have tough when they
not
make their fire
turn.
Rolls.
Oh, yeah. Fire. Good call.
Hmm. Also, interesting things about Fiora 1. Blazing Effigy works on the Avatar, which makes me giggle.
Blazing Effigy?
It's 2 inches off the model, takes a POW 14 fire roll.
Hmm.
Okay.
I think it's only enemy model.
Probably.
I would imagine.
I'm going to double check, but yeah.
I still want to see that, like, I want her to play with a...
Judicator just so you could do it?
A Tristan Judicator.
Oh, yeah.
She doesn't
yeah.
have to run it, and she's just like...
I guess that's another option.
Walks it, he armors it up and walks it forward.
Yeah.
And then...
I get it.
I could Jack Marshall the Sanctifier. On the instead of the other unit of Bastions,
that might be okay as well.
Yep,
he's a little squishy.
He's armor 19. Yep, Blazing Effigy, enemy models within 2 inches.
Yep. Hey, yep.
It's only POW 14 though.
Yeah, that's
Yeah, you know that plan that people sometimes have about jamming your Colossal so it can't get into zones?
Uh-huh. Oh, my God.
Yep.
That is actually disgusting.
Yeah. I mean, that may be the other thing. Well, the other thing Fiora has that's interesting, you guys probably don't know a lot about her. She's got two 8-inch sprays.
Yeah, that was the first thing that came to my mind was the Engine of Destruction 16-inch double flamethrowers or whatever. So I was like, what?
Yeah.
Damn it, Nigel.
Yeah. No, I mean,
that could definitely happen, right? Yeah.
She's going to kill your caster from downtown.
Oh, yeah.
Fiora? Yeah, that's exactly what I was talking about earlier, though, the caster kill that you would never think of.
Right. Yeah.
It's like, it's Fiora 1.
Yeah.
Protectorate. Like, yeah. It's not Krios, so I'm probably Because
the thing
fine.
About those yeah. is she gets within, like, three, you know, it's... She's got to push her luck, but she gets like 2.5 inches away from a Colossal, and that guy's touching his butt. She basically can like use the Colossal with the flamethrowers to. I mean, it's just stupid. It's like, and then you don't see it coming, and they're just like, oh. Yeah.
Yep.
All I could think about when he said 2 8-inch sprays was Fox saying 10 inch sprays.
With the nipple cannons?
Yeah. That's Island of Dr. Moreau, Fiora.
Yeah. Yeah.
Once Arcadius gets done with her.
Other things that are...
He is really into some freaky stuff.
Yeah. She's just squirting and screaming.
Engine is like... just +2 speed, so the danger for that is... It's 16 inches.
Yeah.
16 inches dangerous.
Which is...
Yep.
She's only rat 5. She's only rat 5. They're only pow 12.
Yeah.
I think... Aren't all casters that have a spray rat 5?
I think so.
I think so.
That's a balancing factor, yeah.
Well, there are only 2, right?
No. At least
there's 4. 2 in Merc. There's 3 in Mercs.
Oh.
There's 4 I can think of immediately off the top of my head. Well, 5 Magnus.
You're not a real faction.
Both Magnus and
6
and
another
Bart.
Magnus.
You know what I kind of want?
I was immediately thinking Bart, Karchev, Terminus, and...
Terminus.
Fiora. And then Fiora.
Yeah. And then Magnus.
Wow. Carver.
Wow.
Yeah, Carver has one.
I didn't realize.
Yeah.
I really, really, really want one mechanic in this list, and I just couldn't get it in there. I guess I could drop Eris. I don't really need Eris.
Ooh, I like Eris in the list.
Yeah, I mean, she's fine, except that the Bastions are all blessed, and the Avatar is pow stupid, so...
Thagrosh.
Yep. That one's weird. That's not actually a gun, right? That's just a spell?
Or
does
a gun.
Does he have a gun?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a corrosive fire spray.
Yep.
Hmm.
So anyway, that was my dojo. I was just like getting outside the box. I was like, I'm sick of dealing with this Morvana problem.
I like it, except that I don't want to play against it. But I like it.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. Like, there's a lot of people that have sort of just pushed her to the... Actually... Was thinking about, because of Trevor Christensen, we were talking today, and he got me thinking about Amon Adraza.
Oh, yeah?
Which I know is a bad plan, but I can't help myself.
We were talking about Amon on Museum Minis Miami the other day.
Were you?
Yeah.
Carver's Rat 6.
Carver's Rat 6. He's the best sprayer in the Warcaster
spray 6?
Games.
He's only Spray 6.
Spray 6.
And that'd be why. He has a double-barreled spray gun, though,
it's
right?
It's ROF2.
Yeah. And he can also pow 16.
Make it pow 16.
Yeah.
Yeah, back in Mark 1, Fiora used to kill people all the time with the 2 sprays.
Chad was probably going crazy right about now if he's listening. Gristle and Gristle.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Gristle 2, I think, is a 6? Yes, Gristle 2. Okay. And hers is a spray 10.
Oh, that's right, because I'm always jealous when Gristle sprays. I'm like, you're a 6? What? Just fair.
Just 2.
Yeah.
1 isn't. And Mosar the Desert Walker also has a spray.
Ah, nice. If only somebody from the background had reminded
that was, us. That was amazing how you just kind of brought that up.
Yeah. Nigel, did you have any dojo?
Did you have any sane dojo?
No, not really.
Did you want to talk about your Haley 2 list?
Do you want to try and give our listeners your aids?
I've been... Colin actually got me counter aids because I was playing.
Oh man,
yeah, I was.
You guys are just swapping it back and forth.
It's like a super aids now. It's like
just like incubating here, pass back, incubating.
Yeah,
mutating.
Yeah,
you guys
so Colin,
are just petri dishes of aids.
Colin's been doing a Signar dojo because he doesn't like winning games. and it got me actually dusting off and kicking the tires on an old list I used to play with Haley And we actually went through this. It did, you know, it's just one of those weird things. Like, as much as things have changed, nothing's changed. So, like, the Haley list is you take Haley, Squire, Thorn, Centurion, Arlen Strangeways, Journeyman Warcaster, Rupert, Goblin Tinker.
What?
Arcane Gun Mages, Officer, Defender, Sword Knights, and then this had Alexi in it, but I think we swapped it out. We actually took the Tinker and Alexi out, and we had like either Tactical Arcanist Corps or Einenholt or, you know, some random parts.
Alexia 2 also just fine to slot in there.
Yeah, we talked about that too last night.
Yeah.
But the thing with the list is it's got like four different sort of clock modules that sort of put the game. So the Centurion is basically like Jason Voorhees, and he's this armor 26 against range, armor 24 against melee, guy who stalks the board and can't be charged.
Bart Scallion is literally just like, hey, you can't kill me, I can't kill you. I guess we'll just agree to meet in the center.
Yeah.
But you can drag it.
Maybe. It's dice off 12.
Like,
maybe.
Roll those 13s.
Yeah, the funnest thing was with, like, Josh and Colin that first night. I was selling Colin on it, and Colin was like, he just tried a siege list and it didn't go that well. So I was like, well, let me show you how to play the Haley list. So I played the Haley list, and I think there's at least twice where we had the interaction of like, okay, I'm just going to shoot the Centurion. The first one was like a deviation, and it went to his back arc.
Yeah, I deviated on the back arc.
And it was hot-shotted. So he's like, I'm going to roll 3d6 to see. I was like, well, so what's your back arc armor? 24. And then they were like, he rolls it, and then he's like, wait, how the hell are you getting the 24?
And then like, it's without the shield?
Yeah. and then at one point, we shot it from the front, and it was like 26. And then it was just like, zrip, like the record scratched again. Like, how are we getting to 26?
Yeah.
Well, he's like, 21 base plus 3 plus 2.
I was like, that's...
that's a lot.
That's unacceptable. Is what that is.
And people, when they play against Signar, they don't expect like that kind of an armor skew, because it's, I mean, that's way over dev. I mean, at one point over Devastator is pretty gross. So I mean,
I agree
on a jack that can do something, and he can get you from 17 inches away, and that was sort of the thing. So he stalks the board, he's the unkillable machine that stalks the board, and he sort of protects Thorn, and he protects some of the other elements because of his forward positioning, and he's got your cast around kind of a, he's got a 17 inch threat. And so it's really easy to get that when you can just camp with the feet 10 inches away from his caster and then challenge him to move over 7 inches away. Like, he's got to then back up 7 or die. And especially if you get, like, a lucky crit sustain, he can get 4 focus. I mean, I bond him to her. So then you've got the Defender being run by gun mages, and it basically acts as a storm wall with all the good parts. Like, that was one of the other things, like, your turn one, you moved up. And before I activated, you're like, I just want you to know, I only moved 2 inches. And then I shot him twice, Defender.
Because he snipe-shotted it?
Yep. He, like, TK'd it and, like, temporal accelerated it and snipe-shotted it. And I was like, oh. So I needed to stay in my deployment.
Yeah. The Defender has a 29-inch threat, which is, what, one-off? The distance between the two deployments? So, I mean, you can't really move too
much. He was putting, like, 5 focus into this Defender, this Marshall Defender every turn, but, like, I mean, this was one of the first of the games recently, which was, I'm just going to kill Bart. So...
And this is a list that it's similar to an idea that Ben ran back in the day with Haley Assassination. The Centurion gives it a little bit more staying power. The only problem that I have with the style of list is it's the Haley can do any one of these things, but it is one of these things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You cannot run the Defender and throw spells, really.
Right.
You cannot run the Defender and run the Centurion.
Right.
Mm. That's where the Centurion's great, because the Centurion, again... your game plan's always Defender, Defender, Defender. And the Centurion just moves 6 and says, don't charge me. And then eventually you're going to switch that gear. And they, it's just sort of... the other thing, too, is like the Arlen Strangeways problem. If you can kind of get him in a forward spot, like, you can make him immune to free strikes, and then he's like a retarded problem. Yeah,
this actually came up.
Yeah.
I did not know that this existed, and he had to thread the Centurion to try and finish Bart off by, like, walking him around a Nomad, and then through Galleon free strike. So it was, like, 3 free strikes from heavies one of them a colossal, which he was able to ignore to walk his, like, 8 inches, 2 inches reach to get back around behind the galleon and kill Bart.
It was a 10-inch walk. It was a 2-inch TK and then an 8-inch.
Right. Yeah.
So it's like, that's just a walking, you know.
That's just the, like, walking the speed for Jack.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
And that's ultimately what her feet lets you do, is it's almost, her feet mechanically allows you to have two of those plans at the same time, because it's just a time walk.
Yeah.
So you're sort of like defender, and then you put the Centurion in a position that next turn it's his go with all the focus, or however.
Or you spell bomb them with the defender ready for backup and the Centurion ready for backup.
And Bart's even like, a little bit unique in that, like, he can counter feet off of her feet to be like, you time walk me, but you can't do anything on your like free turn, or nothing like super high value on your free turn. But it still is like a nightmare set of vectors, at least for that particular list that I was playing that particular matchup.
I mean Haley is always manhandled small model count list.
Yeah.
You don't want to be sub 30 models when you sit down across from Epic Haley.
Yeah.
But the other one is...
did you dominate a Nomad and walk it out of his control?
Every turn, I thought about it. Like, I thought... every turn it occurred to me, I just never did. I was like, I just want to keep shooting that caster.
We had that exact discussion afterwards, and he was like, I kept thinking about dominating your Nomads. And I'm like, yeah. And then you were like, wait. Then I would control a Nomad. I don't... Why would I ever want to do that?
And so you were just like, I'm going to do 2 points of damage to Bart instead.
Yeah, basically. Yeah.
And Bart was like, this is getting kind of old.
Well, that defender, it gets, you know, early game, he's got a snipe shot. But after a while, it's like, well, I'll just walk 7 and shoot 16-inch range guns. So he's got just a mere 22-inch regular threat with crit brutals. And then with Deadeye, if you just really have to hit one thing really freaking hard, you just Deadeye him and then give him the Arnold Strangeways focus, and it's a 46 to hit. Which almost rolls right into the crit brutal, so 46 damage, which is pretty sweet if you can get those pulled off. Actually, I didn't crit brutal you a single time with any of those, but every turn it was.
Oh, you should have imagined it was a conquest.
That's all. Yeah.
So like we actually had that discussion too.
Holy crap!
But then that he has Thunderbolt on demand, like 2 Thunderbolt shots. So the gun mages can push out of 10. The big disadvantage of the list is they don't have snipe, so they push whatever it is they're trying to scenario control out of 10, and then the defender can just go bam bam, go to 13 and then to 16 or farther, which is pretty sweet. And then you just start winning on scenario with a Centurion, and then they have to sort of deal with that. I mean, it's got a lot of like weird angles. I thought it was going to be dated and we'd have to make a ton of changes, but
no, it's a blue control deck.
Yeah.
You're just like, it's very frustrating to play against because you're just like, I just can't do anything. Like, all my jacks are facing the wrong direction, picking their butts, you know, because they're getting TK'd. Yeah. I'm getting shot with... And you're just like... It's like a paper cut. The stupid defender is shooting me. And that's all that's really happening. You're just like, I'm kind of annoyed. But... And then pretty soon, it's towards the end of the game, you're like, wait, you have 2 control points? And I still haven't done anything. And it's... Yeah.
Yeah.
The one thing you have to watch out for the list is that it is too easy to get, like... assassination of happy, because it's just so easy to get the defender on the caster.
I feel like that's a problem you might have.
But
I don't know if it's a problem with the list or if it's a problem with Nigel. I'm just saying.
As their caster, because you're actually hitting him every turn, but you're not killing him necessarily, but you're putting him on a clock. But every turn he survives double defender shots. It's 2 defender shots that didn't sandpaper a little off of Nomad or something. Mm-hmm. So then that starts to weigh on the game because, you know, you're wasting a lot of resources.
It's a 9-point heavy that's not doing anything.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, once you commit to it by about 2 turns, you have to finish that plan. That's your only plan, which that I think that is a flaw on the list that I have to, like, sort of think about. But
I think it's a flaw in Nigel.
Yeah.
Nigel.
Well, it's so
funny. I mean, I was like, on turn 2, he was just like, well, I'm going to go for the assassination. I'm like, 2 inches out of my deployment zone, like yada 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 yada. He's like, well, I got my feet, so you know, I just get to do it again for free. So
I hate it.
I don't like it.
Yeah, I've had a lot of good times. I mean, it's been road tested quite a bit. It's definitely effective. I mean, I've played like there's so many lists that it just auto beats. Like, you know. I'll take the Tom Gwan. If, like, Tom Gwan ever had to, like, challenge me in a neutral field in Idaho with, like, his Morton Everlist, I'd be like, Epic Haley. And, like, watch Morton, you know, she just can't hide from it. But, yeah, I've done that list matchup a few times at tournaments. It's pretty sweet.
I'd like to see that. I would like to see that.
I mean, if you want to play a game, we could put High Reclaimer down.
He'd find a way.
That's true with that movement. I guess it wouldn't be that hard to get a defender in the smokes and then just shoot you twice with that.
He will straight die to shoot him. He might straight die.
This will be like, well, let me think about it a little bit. Then it's like, it'll be like concentric circles of vanguards around, or of devouts around him. This is a change from your list from my Ocean's 18 game.
I'll play the same list.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I told him that I was going to try and take every smoke cloud that I could in the next time that he and I played, and he was just going to have to fight through six layers of smoke cloud, and then Bart would be standing in a smoke cloud behind a Glossolid, behind all those, mm-hmm. and good luck. So, I mean, that's basically what High Reclaimer does, right?
All right. Well, with that, apparently we're going to break so John and Nigel can play a game. We will report on that next time. Thanks for tuning in, everyone.
It's going to be a weird report, but yeah.
Nigel's going to be like, I scrapped Haley, too.
We have good news. The Death Star is operational.
That's yeah, right. we fired it up tonight.
The laser is fully operational.
So, new things from the Muse store soon?
Well, we leave for Mayhem Cup the day after tomorrow. Tomorrow I have to work all day.
You mean a week from the Mayhem Cup? A few days, like 5 days ago, we left.
Yeah, you've got to get your
all that time you have. There's all that time that you've had
to get things up, and it's
since today. So soon,
ish. Yeah, it won't be long. But yeah, no, it's pretty exciting. I'm actually just happy to be able to because we fired it up and it worked, and I was so giddy because I was kind of worried. Because it was kind of an adventure, because the movers came in and they moved the laser down. And then my wife called me and she was like, those movers, I don't know about those guys. I'm like, oh, God, what did they do? And she's like, well, they kind of like moved the laser down in the basement, still inside its box, sort of tipped it up on its side and sort of rolled it down the stairs, basically on a dolly, just like, duh. And I was just like, what? Did you tell them it was a laser, a delicate piece of it? She goes, yeah, I did. You know. So I don't know. Nigel, you were here, right? Mm-hmm. I was out of town, so.
Yeah. No, that was the guy's plan. Well, the other thing, too, is there was like, there's at least three, but I think there might have been four guys. And they just had the one guy strap it to himself. Like, so he had straps over his shoulder, and then he had the dolly. And then three guys watched him go down the stairs. So it was just like, thump, thump,
oh,
thump,
wow.
Thump. And he would do like one stair at a time, just sort of watching it like rock down. So that was neat. But.
Although I would like to point out, there's a fire extinguisher right next to the laser.
Hooray!
Wait, is it there right now?
After only two house fires, he's learned.
Ish.
My favorite thing was I opened the new laser. I opened the guidebook, and the very, very, very first thing it says is, never leave the laser device undetected while the system is operating.
Uh-huh.
Check. Always have a fire extinguisher available as number two.
Uh-huh.
As a laser beam can ignite flammable materials.
Uh-huh. Mm. Huh. Do you? It looks like a 9-point checklist. Do you meet any of those points?
Well, I mean, number five is the system must be used only by authorized and trained personnel.
You have been trained. You actually did some training, right?
Sort of.
This is terrifying me, John. Your family should also be terrified.
Number four is, have we talked about fire extinguishers?
Seriously, we can't stress enough, have a fire extinguisher.
I have. Go look. There's one right in there.
We're on Facebook, Muse on Minis. We're on Twitter, at Muse on Minis. This has been Keith.
John.
Josh.
Colin.
Nigel.
Have a nice day. And we're back.
All right, Lance. John, you need to turn on your mic and put it up because you're going to be asked a question.
Yeah, yeah.
Lance, cut this in. Use your magic and cut this into the pre-ramble.
Yeah, Lance, you're only editing two podcasts, and we realized that you just didn't have enough to do, so we decided to add this gem because we thought it was worth your time.
All right, I have to change up the delivery of the joke by a little bit because it won't work on you three, most likely. So, Colin.
I have a question for you.
What?
What's a dick fur?
I don't know.
To piss with. Yarr!
We turned the mic back on for that.
Best, isn't that the best part?
Worth it.
Count it.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. You're welcome, Lance.
A horrific pirate joke.
Not really. I think I do, though.
Not really. I think. So did you just make the last one up on the spot?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
Well, kind of. I thought of like a million. I thought of like a million ways to go. And then I had an amazing one where I was going to ask. I was going to ask, what's the worst thing the Germans have ever done?
No, the Holocaust.
I couldn't do it.
That's like not even close to being a real joke.
You just did it. What do you mean you can't? You just
like
did it.
But this is in the way preamble. It's totally good.
This may or may not be removed from the very best.
It's being removed.
It's like the basketball defense.
Actually,
it's a pirate joke.
I love Lance like a brother, but I cannot count on him to remove things that I think need to be removed.
No. He does. He uses his best. I think he errs on the side of letting us have our say.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I prefer.
Yep, absolutely. No, he does a good job, but
I don't want my pirate jokes cut.
I want all of your pirate jokes. Actually, I just want you cut.
Or my porno references.
Mm-hmm.
That's my thing for the other cast.
Keep it in Miami.
What?
Sir.
Hey, don't make fun of Miami.
What happens in Miami?
Should certainly stay there.
Super.
can super I just say, sweet. I'm so excited that I'm literally never going to have to try and sift through a Crump battle report again. My life is complete.
Crump indicated that the reason Miami will be the best podcast is because there will never be a battle report on it. So.
Well, with him on the cast, I can see why.
This is a very, very good thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a good call.
In the pre-ramble, I hope Lance keeps it, because in the pre-ramble for that, I did a impression of a Crump Battle Report, and it was pretty good. It was pretty spot on.
I moved up and I attacked. No, wait, that was like a different turn.
Yeah.
So I moved my guys up like to flank on the left. Wait, that wasn't a different game. So actually, they moved their stuff on like my turn two. No, it was during my turn two that I was moving my stuff. Was it kind of like that?
It was almost exactly like that.
Yeah. Have you seen the Lego movie yet?
No.
What is wrong with you? 97%.
I went and saw another movie that got equivalently good ratings, but, you know, was probably better.
Which one?
The Wind Rises.
I've never heard of it.
You've never heard of Miyazaki before, Colin.
His Wayward Journey to Taco Bell.
Wayward Journey to Taco Bell.
When he's stoned or just general?
Just general.
Yeah.
Yep.
Taco Bell sounds kind of legit.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Doesn't smell legit.
It doesn't feel legit in my stomach.
Also, it makes me relive the South Park episode about Chipotle. That's never fun.
Chipotle makes me relive the South Park episode about Chipotle.
Whose phone is that?
That's mine.
Oh, okay.
It's in my coat. That's all the way over there.
You better answer it.
Yeah, Fox, like Fox is right there.
Probably Jackie.
Yeah.
Fox, front, right, coat, pocket.
Oh, he legitimately wants it. Like, he's nervous now.
No, I'm not. No.
Yeah, he's going to
play. I mean, Keith never checks his phone for any reason.
This is true.
Never checks his phone, never checks Facebook, never checks the forum.
Except for recently. You notice he's been on Facebook a lot more?
It's not Facebook. He's on, like, a chat program. I don't know which one it is.
Chat roulette?
Yeah, exactly.
Legit.
Some old school chat roulette. Yeah. Nothing but dongs at this point. Nothing but dongs.
It was like, it used to be like 25% that you would hit a dong. Now it's just 100%. It was like not even roulette anymore. You're just like, this is chat dick.
Yeah. Now it is only a question of what is being done to the dong. Whether it has clown makeup on, which is super disturbing.
That's what? Clown makeup? I think
the clown.
Crump legitimately thinks that I kicked him off the podcast.
You did. We all saw it. It was very sad. It was like he had the sad walking away like music playing from Hulk.
It was the Hulk. Yeah, the Hulk walking away music. And he did like a little look back, and you didn't even look at him.
Oh, whatever. God, you guys. You're going to get...
It was a very punchable puppy face.
Yeah. It was super punchable.
Just one tear fell down from
there's
his
only
eye.
Look, in life, hard decisions have to be made, and there's only one way to have Crump's legit podcast, and that's for Crump to do it.
I feel like we were holding them back.
That's your excuse.
Something was holding something back. That is as far as I will go.
Crump has such good natural chemistry with those guys because you guys have been friends for so long.
Yep. That's a good reason. Yep.
I'm serious.
You remember
I agree, John.
You remember how I've told you that the more you talk, the worse it gets for you?
I'm, like, legitimately not around. Like, I honestly feel that way.
Crump told me that he's not sure he can ever feel like you guys are friends again, in all seriousness.
So, bonus? This is like,
I think it's fine, John. I think it's fine. I'm sure if Crump has a problem, he will talk to you about it.
Well, I mean, I just hear him like, he basically tells me that I effed him over every time I see him now.
You effed him big time.
Yeah. You effed me big time.
That was the worst accent ever.
I'm Asian. It's an Asian accent. Deal with it.
Is it?
Yes, I'm Asian. Therefore, it's my accent. Therefore, it's an Asian accent.
Okay. Oddly, it sounds exactly like someone from one of the crappy Dakotas attempting
whatever Crump thinks about it. I was on that cast last night, and it was super super freaking fun. So I think that cast is going to be sweet. It's got a completely different energy than this one. So
yeah, we're very NPR, and
yeah. This is like,
and they're very, they're very Pee Wee's Playhouse. And so,
I might have never had as much fun as Colin's Corner.
Whoa, Colin's Wild Speculation Corner.
Yeah, I feel like you need to remove the wild speculation. It just needs to be the Colin's Corner.
Colin's 100% real model corner.
Although Fox dropped another gem, like, because initially he called and texted me like 2 hours before the podcast, and he's like, "You're gonna do Katie's corner." I'm like, "Great, I don't know what that means." So eventually we figured out like I was gonna talk about beer or something. So there was like Katie's corner, and then there was Colin's wild speculation corner. And we're just like, Crump was like, "There's too many corners." And Fox was like, "We're going to get boxed in."
Yeah, that cast has surprisingly good natural chemistry with no practice.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, it's going to be good. I'm excited. And then we have a third cast.
Yeah.
Well, this is still pre-ramble. Yeah. Do we want to talk about it in the pre-ramble, or do we want to...
I mean, we have people should have to earn this information, I feel like.
Fair enough.
So wait till the end of the podcast. And,
Just put it in the pre-ramble.
Just put it in the pre-ramble.
Yeah, pre-ramble is at the end of the podcast.
Yeah, but you record it first, and then Lance does all the work.
Thanks, Lance.
Thank you.
Okay, go.
Well, no, it's just you got Muse on Minis Miami on the midweek, and then at the end of the week, you have Muse on Minis SVU.
Bum, bum.
Bum, 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 bum,
bum. It's gonna be awesome.
Dun, dun.
Yeah, every segment change needs that.
Why did you choose SVU?
It seemed the most appropriate for the subject matter.
There'll be a lot of special victims out there.
Yeah. Also, it's a tasteful name that will offend no one.
Yeah.
Much like the podcast.
No, it's SVU because I'm a Kotor player and Josh is a Merc player, and we're only going to let people who play factions that victimize them be on the podcast.
Which will be victimized?
Wait, the victimized Mercs and Kotor?
Yeah.
So we're going to let everyone on the podcast.
Like, we are victims
right.
of the factions we play. And so only like-minded
individuals. Oh, yeah,
I
like
so
that.
I can be on because I am a Krix player, people look down on me.
Because
and so my faction causes me to be victimized.
No.
Because you're a Rhett player, if you played Rhett.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Well,
I've played some games of Rhett.
I play Minions. Yeah. Does that count?
Control counts. Minions.
Oh, yeah,
Minions
I'm a Control player as well. Scorn. All right, so good.
Scorn, not so much.
What?
No. Scorn is
kind
of
OP.
Scorn is clearly one of the best factions, and Scorn players just aren't good enough to get
it. I mean, look
it.
How good Trevor does with Scorn.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. Trevor, you should see the smirk on his face right now, Trevor.
If Trevor and Nick can do it, anybody can do it.
I did not say that.
Oh, no. You said
you didn't,
Trevor
you just,
could do it.
You just smirked it.
Yeah. No. All I said, all I specifically said, well, this is one of those times, right?
Yep.
All right, I'm out.
Well, that's no fun, John.
Yeah, eventually we're all going to just learn not to talk, and this is going to be the worst podcast of all time.
Hello, and welcome to episode 163 of Mies on Minis.
No, it's 164, Keith.
It is 164.
The script is wrong.
My rap sheet says 164.
The script is wrong.
Much like Ron Burgundy, I do not deviate.
Well, then there's going to be a lot of grammatical errors.
I feel like there is. Oh, Jesus. I feel like there is not remotely enough scotch in front of you for you to be like Ron Burgundy.